Bloomberg, Chicago community activist and organizer Philip Jackson, and The Worst with Claire Zelke and Steve Delahoy. And now here's your host, a man who is rested up, reloaded, and ready for a nap, Justin Kaufman.
I think I'm getting a second wind, though. You know, I feel like maybe 6:30, that nap, that hour-long nap I just took before the show. No. You come off your vacation, right, Pete? You come off, you got to get back into the swing of things. That's where we're at right now. I've got all the energy in the world. Hello, everybody. Justin Kaufman here. It's a download here on 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Good to be back. Had a great week. Also back tonight, Pete Zimmerman. How are you, my man? There's a lot of static on that.
I am wonderful.
You got a lot of energy, man.
Good to be back.
Yeah, good to be back. We had the week off last week, and we're back today. Perfect day to be back in Chicago. Beautiful night. Back to school. Everyone sharing stories about what happened in the cafeteria, who they sat by, mm-hmm. what the playground was like this year, and when they are going to get their homework. That's coming up, of course, tomorrow. You really have to be pushing it if you got homework on the first day, right?
I thought the new thing, the whole thing about education now is no homework.
Right. That's a story that gets circulated every single year.
And that's not new?
No. In August, it's always like, you know, it'd be great if there was no homework. You know, they do that in France. And then one teacher somewhere does it and BuzzFeed writes about it and they're like, I think homework's bad. There is absolutely no way that you're going to see that catch on until maybe next year when the stories come out next year. We'll see. Where'd you go for your vacay?
I went to the beautiful state of Michigan.
Yeah, nice time. Yeah. Good time?
It was great. Went to Grand Rapids.
Saw Kevin Matthews.
I was thinking about Kevin because I was wondering where he lived. I was like, where does he live?
They don't have a Grand Rapids sightseeing van that takes you to the stars places in Grand Rapids?
And not like, welcome to Grand Rapids, home of Kevin Matthews, former radio star. You know, they have that like in like the home to Hickory Hill. Who would say, right. Home of Tom Puxtus, 1987 Olympian, who like came in 17th, you know. But
he still. He got there.
And that's a city that I'm sure you know. Have you been to Grand Rapids?
I have driven through. I have not actually spent any time in Grand Rapids. I apologize for that.
There is a brewery on every street corner.
Oh, yeah?
It's just drinking.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, they're really coming on with their craft beer explosion?
Every block, there's a different craft brewery.
That's good.
It's very nice. And then we went to Traverse City.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Went to cherry pie, maybe?
Picked up some peaches.
Peaches, okay.
And then went to the Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Jeez, what a week.
That was just two days.
You were moving. You like that. Did you put a time limit on every stop? You're like, we've got 35 minutes here.
Oh, yeah.
And then everybody back in the car.
I'm on the itinerary. Yeah.
That sounds good.
It was good, though.
I went to Los Angeles for the week.
It's a little bit more exotic.
It was exotic. I will say this, though, that, you know, for as much planning, you know, you put it, I'm the kind of guy who likes to go Wally World, very vacation, you know, get a whole itinerary down, family, the whole bit. I got to the airport. And I got everyone's backs ready, you know, I was ready to go, and I went through security, and the person goes, August 15th, your license is expired.
Oh, like on your birthday?
Yeah, like I had birthday, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Totally forgot that it was expired. No one ever said at any bar purchasing anything with my license, hey, you only got a week to go. No one sent anything in the mail. Like, I just did not have a thought about it for like, I mean, maybe at the beginning of the year, like January, I'm like, last year for the license. But I just didn't even think about it at all.
Why would you?
And then they were like, well, they let me on the plane. They don't care about that. But for renting a car, you're in L.A., you can't do anything but rent a car. And so you can't rent a car with an expired license.
Yeah.
So luckily, it worked out. It was fine because I just put in my wife's card or her driver's license. But it was a nice start to a vacation in which I thought I was in control. I was not. I mean, I felt like such an idiot. I felt like I put the whole, like, I was down for like an hour and a half. Like, I put the whole vacation in jeopardy. Like, the anxiety I felt on the plane, you know, knowing that we had to land and go to Enterprise or whatever, it was so intense. I was just, like, sweating, like, what was going to happen. You know, and I tried to go through the whole system and then do the thing where I'm like, oh, it is? Oh, that's so interesting. I had no, oh, well, geez, oh. Is there any way to look the other way? Oh, They didn't know. And the woman was hilarious because she did all the paperwork. She had my license the whole time. And I'm like, they're not even going to notice. All the stuff. You want the fill-up? Do you want the gas fill-up? Do you want the insurance? Do you want the iPass? You know, like all the stuff you do at a rental place. And it wasn't till the last thing she said where she's like, also, this is expired, so you can't do this. And he was like, why'd you waste my time?
So you really went through, instead of just going right to the wife, you just tried to do it that way.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's complicated.
It was complicated because it was under my reservation was under mine. It was my credit card. There's a lot that goes into it. But it was and on the way home. So the vacation was awesome. And we went to Universal Studios for a little 3D jostling. That's all they do now. They're not actual rides. You just get in a flight simulator. They're like, welcome to the ride. This is the Transformers ride. And then you just get jostled around in this car and 3D images pop in your face. And then you're done. And you're like, I'm going to throw up for whatever, $115 is a day rate ticket on that. And you're like, oh, my God, this is a lot of money for me to be motion sick the entire time. But it's really nice, really beautiful in the mountains. But the other thing I had is when we went back, like we got an early flight. I think it was we flying out at 9:30 or something like that. So, you know, to get there and worry about everything, you get everything. You're out of that Airbnb by 6:45, 7 in the morning. We get there. We get to the gate. We're all fine. There's excuse me, everybody who says, it's very unusual, but we need to clear the terminal.
Oh.
There has been a security breach, and you need to leave the airport. Even if you'll have to be rescreened. So you're at LAX, and you're like, oh, you got to be kidding me, right? So everyone gets escorted out, and when you come out, there's like hundreds of people waiting because now the lines just got backed up. It looked a lot like that Midway Airlines video of the TSA where you're like, no, and you're now going to the back of the line in the sense that you already went through all that, but you have to go to the back. And you're standing outside, and there's a sniper up on the roof, and there's cops everywhere. They took, like, even the people from Cinnabon had to come out. And they were like high-fiving, like, you know, that moment when you're working like an $8 an hour job at the airport and like, hour of just something new, not lines of everyone asking me for a Cinnabon. And they never really told us what the deal was. I guess it was not even it was something happened on a bus, like a bus leading up to the airport.
So you never felt like your life was in peril?
No.
Do you take charge, though?
I was very zen about it, you know. Others in the party were a little bit like antsy, like, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. I was like, there's nothing you can do about it. And I kept saying to my wife and to my friends, I was like, they're going to remember us. Right? Like, we're not going to the back of the line. They're going to remember this Virgin American, you know, that we already did, and they're going to let us go to the front. You watch. But it was becoming more and more hectic that it wasn't going to happen. And then...
miss your flight?
Yeah, well, then the flight was already missed. Luckily, they grounded all the flights. So we were worried that they were just going to fly it empty because of connectors, you know.
Yeah.
So when we got done, when they said all clear, they took this one. I'll give this TSA agent a ton of credit. She's like, you 35 people come with me. And like we snaked in front of everybody to the evil glares of everybody. But I was giving them evil glares back, being like, this is the second time. I'm taking my shoes off for a second time. What have you done? Stood there. So anyway, we got in. The flight was actually, I probably got to O'Hare only an hour and a half later than we were supposed to. So it worked out, but yeah, it was crazy.
Oh, man.
I've never been a part of an actual airport
evacuation.
EVAC.
Yeah, no. Right?
It was very orderly. I give them a lot of credit.
Yeah. Really?
It seems like they do the lot, to be honest. And I looked it up. Like, it was funny when you look up on Google, like LAX evacuation, like every third day it happens over there. So you're like, I'm just from out of town. So anyway, that happened, which was good. But it was a good...
In between the hassle of the license and the flight, we're at home. We had
a
wonderful
time. It was a good time. LA traffic and infrastructure can eat it. Like, everything about it is... Even Chicago is as massive traffic experiences is. There are a lot of different ways to get different places. In LA, there aren't. And so you find yourself... Everything is an hour. From where you're at. Everything is an hour. And just real quick, the story, we went to the Hollywood Bowl. That was our big thing to see my friend Adam do the Star Wars John Williams. Yeah. We saw John Williams do the orchestra. He was leading the orchestra.
Amazing.
It's a great show. But the way they did it, the getting into the Hollywood Bowl, which is on Hollywood side, and it's a great venue. It's amazing. To get in there, it took 45 minutes of being on an expressway ramp. Like, you just weren't moving, and someone said, well, there's an accident up there. And you're like, yeah, it should still move, right? We finally got in, and the way they do their parking there, which is, as a Chicagoan, it blows my mind, it's stacked parking. You go into a row almost like you're waiting at the, you know, at the emissions place, right? And then you turn your car off and go in. And then when you come out, everybody has to be there in front of you to be leave. Able to leave. And so there's always, like, the wanderer, like, the second car up is just not there, so everybody has to wait. It was maddening.
That's ludicrous.
Speaking of anxiety, the same anxiety I had for the expired license crept up on the Hollywood Bowl. The whole time I was watching John Williams, I'm like, what's that going to work? And it came true. It rang true, Pete. Like, I was like, yes, because I got there. And then you give the word. And that person who, like, is just calmly walking 20 minutes after you got in your car, who's just like, oh, I think the car's up here, hon. Like, let's finish our wine. It's crazy. I couldn't believe that.
Where
was
do they have to leave early? Like,
it says on the sign, no early leaves.
That's the only place you could park, or is this fancy parking?
No. This was like the B lot. The fancy parking, I think, is not that. I think the regulars, the commoners, the peons, we get the stacked parking. It was ludicrous. And I asked somebody, you're like, it's kind of like that every time. And you're like, it's every time you go to the Hollywood Bowl, this is the experience?
Well, how would all you right. go? Yeah, somebody's got to come exactly. up with a plan.
L.A. is fine, but it ain't mine. All right, so download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We've got a great show tonight. First, let's start it off with Carry Out. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. It's back to school time. Hundreds of thousands of students head back to Chicago classrooms today, and all of the suburbs are like, who cares? We're like already 2 months in. The big news story of the day is surrounding strike talk. Will the teachers go on strike after not being able to agree to new terms? Or will they agree on a contract that ultimately will pay them less and have less pay-ins for pensions? It's, you know what? If Dick Wolf was smart, this would be the next drama. Chicago schools. Until then, it's a reality show. Bad weekend for violence in Chicago. 13 killed to make Labor Day the most violent holiday weekend of the year. When asked for comment, Labor Day was like, yes, take that, 4th of July, in your face, Memorial Day. Wait, what's this for again? Oh. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson said most of the crime is happening in select districts on the south and west sides. And he's calling on the parents of those districts to step up and address the violence. Agreed, that would be simple. But at this point, grounding for gangbanging might be tough to pull off. I mean, I have enough trouble trying to get my kid to turn off his iPad. Hey, it's the official kickoff to the presidential campaign. So everything from the past 18 months, that was preseason, spring training, if you will. Good to know. Today, Clinton coughed some more on the campaign trail, and she called for Trump to release his tax returns, to which Trump replied, nobody cares about that. This from the guy who ran beauty pageants, which is the ultimate in nobody cares. Also, Trump went off script today to rip on Clinton's foreign policy, saying that when she talks to Putin, he just laughs at her. God, I'm really not liking this Putin guy. Who's this guy? Is this Trump's golf buddy? Oh, he's the president of Russia? Oh, good to know. So tight. But regardless, some polls have Trump back in this race, some even saying it's neck and neck, to which Clinton said, neck? Yeah, there's something wrong with my neck, too. I'm going to die like a month in. Doctors are saying that this year's flu bug could be a concern and that the shot is better than nasal spray. Really? Shots? All of this technology, automated cars, wireless headphones, Bluetooth, and we haven't figured out a better way to do a flu shot? How about like a flu jello shot? Or a flu jello suppository? I'd rather put a jello flu suppository up my butt than deal with the flu shot. Is it just me? Let's get working on this together, doctors. Ugh. The giant panda just came off the endangered species list, which means panda sandwiches for everybody. You know what? I give all of the credit to the rapper designer. Panda, 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 panda. And weather, come on, it's super hot, right? Probably shouldn't have worn my flannel today, but come on. I thought it was fall. Everybody says it's the first day of fall. In sports, the Chicago Bears scoured the waiver wire like a guy who auto-drafted this weekend. The Bears are now proud owners of one of the Green Bay Packer Longhairs. Yeah, Josh Sitton comes over for $7 million a year. That's $2 million more than what the Packers deem to be too expensive. And he automatically becomes the best offensive lineman on the team. Not good.
To make room, the Bears cut the final connection to the 2007 Super Bowl team and kicker Robbie Gould. Gould was as good as gold for a long time, but not last year or this preseason. So the most expensive kicker in football got kicked through the uprights. The Bears are catching flack for the way they cut him at midnight Sunday night. Not necessarily the thanks for your outstanding career press conference Bears fans were hoping for. But make no mistake, Robbie Gould was awesome. Remember when we had to worry about kicks? Exactly. Let's see what happens when Connor Barth, the new kicker, shanks left to lose the game in Houston. Yeah, it's going to sting. But all in all, I like the moves the Bears are making. If for nothing else, headlines. They know how to get attention for a team that really doesn't deserve any. Yet. 12-4. 13-3, 12-4, yeah. The Bears could go 6-0, and it wouldn't matter because all sports fans are firmly fixed on the Chicago Cubs. 10 is the magic number. They could wrap up the division in St. Louis next week. How great would that be? In the meantime, this team continues to exceed expectations and create new ones. Is it safe to say that the Cubs are World Series or bust at this point? You gotta love it. Ham Jam, Jason Hammel, will start tonight in Milwaukee. The Blackhawks are only a few weeks away from camp, but first, a World Hockey Tournament that will feature Kane, Taves, and Corey Crawford. Duncan Keith sitting it out. So remember this tournament when Eddie Olczyk says, "It looks like the Hawks are tired. They just don't have their legs." Next April, because you know what's going to happen. And finally tonight, the Playboy model who shamed a woman in the L.A. gym on social media. The LAPD says there may be grounds for her arrest and a charge that would include prison time. Hey, you know what? Look on the bright side. There'll be a lot of different types of bodies in prison for her to mock. I'm sure she'll be real popular, which is what she always wanted to be. The popular girl. That's the carryout for September 6, 2016. To beat the heat, we're filling your soda cups to the brim with ice and a smidge of soda. You know, you got to stay hydrated. Coming up, it's Touche, Chris Roebling, and Dave Lundy in studio tonight. The official kickoff of the presidential campaign, which is so stupid. Since it's been going on for 22 months. We'll talk with those guys coming up after the news. Stay with us. 720 WGN. All right. Rob Martire, how are you tonight?
Welcome back. Thank Justin, you, Pete, good to have you guys back.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
You look recharged, ready to roll.
Hey, man, thanks for holding it down here.
You were the guy. It's tough.
I was thinking poolside. I should tune in to see if I can get some Martire updates.
Nothing like listening
just,
on the...
It was just in the hills. It was in the Hollywood Hills. This was really hard to get reception. I was trying. Yeah. It just kept going in and out, but yeah.
WGN.com, baby.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Touche, Chris Roebling, and Dave Lundy. They're back for the official kickoff of the presidential campaign season.
I got to say this.
Ludicrous.
Let labor stand and walk abroad and take its place with kings. For who has labored more than God, the maker of all things? That was the couplet that my grandfather commissioned to be on the masthead of the McLean County Labor Record 115 years ago.
Wow. Which just goes to show you, Chris actually does have heritage with heart, even if Chris has forgotten all of it at this point.
All right, let's get right
One
to it.
One might say, touche!
Touche. All right, so the big news today is this is somewhat the official... which is so outdated, but the idea of this being the official kickoff for the presidential campaign, 9 weeks left. Polls, a lot tightening up. We saw Clinton with 7 points, 11 points, 12 points, wherever you look. Now it's tightened up. It's gotten closer. Some even say dead heat. How much should we be paying attention to as the polls start to get closer and closer to the real showdown, which is October?
Well, I mean, I think obviously what you don't want to look at one poll and say this poll is the definitive poll.
Wouldn't that be great if we could?
But there's no such thing. That's why CNN does a poll. You know, they do their own poll and then they do a poll of polls, and you know, they got the Real Clear Politics average and all the rest of the stuff. there's no doubt that there's been tightening. Hillary Clinton took the last 2 weeks of August, and she did almost nothing but fundraising, other than a speech she gave to the American Legion on American exceptionalism, which, by the way, was a great speech that pretty much nobody covered. Exactly.
Now, so, if she would have coughed.
Exactly. Had she coughed, which I just did, by the way, on the air, so you know what that means. Dun, dun, dun.
I think we need to see your medical record.
Exactly.
Are you healthy enough to be here?
But Chris, this is good news for Trump, because there was a point a couple weeks ago that it felt like we were asking for him to resign.
We'll take it, but the truth is that guys like Dave look closely at the polls and find out the following. Hillary's been decaying. Trump has not been expanding. So what you see is Trump sort of going along, which at least he's not decaying. So from my standpoint, that's good.
But other Hillary, than mentally.
With the revelations, not only was she out fundraising with ultra-rich people, UNHWIs, ultra-high net worth individuals. So that's her happy hunting ground for these big contributions from people like Cher or Paul McCartney or John Bon Jovi or somebody like that. Anyway, she was out doing that, but the FBI was putting out information about her and the scandals, which we'll get to in a second. The good thing for Trump is that he is now up in one recent poll, a very big, serious poll, by 20 points with independents. So he's doing 3 or 4 times better with independents today than Mitt Romney was doing. And that could be, in the long run, that could be very helpful to Trump. But it's still early, and polls are best to show kind of movement and trends, right, but not definitive results.
Okay, so this week, I mean, if we kick off today, there was Hillary Clinton defending her health, as we saw. She's opening up to reporters on her plane. They both got nice planes. And then the other story, of course, Trump kind of going off script when it comes to foreign policy and going after Clinton when it comes to, I guess, the idea of what foreign leaders think of her.
Well, I mean, I think that there's two big stories from the Clinton campaign's perspective. Number one is that the press, the supposedly all friendly press that always gives Hillary a pass, except for the fact that they've been hammering her relentlessly for months and years on the email stuff. But other than that, the press is finally looking again at the fact that Donald Trump is a crook. And in January and December and the entire primary campaign, Donald Trump defended his past contributions by saying, hey, if I put money into a politician's pockets, they will kiss my, and he, you know, said the A word on in his rallies. And he said that he could get whatever he wants. Maybe it's not today, but maybe it's 2-3 years later. Well, right, lo and behold, the only actual proven pay to play so far is that the Trump Foundation gave an illegal contribution. And this is not my assertion. This is the IRS's assertion. They paid a fine because foundations are not allowed to make political contributions. So the Trump Foundation gave a political contribution to the Florida Attorney General in response to her call asking for $25,000 at a time when she was
investigating
Trump University. And then lo and behold, the contributions happened and the investigation was
dropped. That
seems
too ridiculous. I mean, and there's a lot of people who will go, you know, will skirt her, and Trump himself will defend it, because it sounds almost too ludicrous, the idea that she's like, well, I'm about to investigate. Let me call and see if I can get some money out of it. I mean, it just seems...
If this was Clinton, you would say, oh, my God, this raises horrendous appearances.
Yeah, I would say that. I don't know if Justin...
And Chris would go off the deep end, and all the press would go nuts, and God.
Wait.
And Trump, they haven't paid any attention to this thing.
You gotta say, yeah.
Well, I mean, Trump shouldn't have done it, or the Trump Foundation shouldn't have done it. And didn't Biondi or Bondi or whatever her name is, the Florida Attorney General, give it back? She gave it back?
No. She never disgorged it. Trump reimbursed the foundation out of his pocket, which was probably the first time he gave money to the foundation in 10 years.
Well, it's obviously that shouldn't happen. And everybody knows it shouldn't happen, and that should not have happened. So that was bad that happened. And, you know, let's...
Foundation.
That is zilcho compared to the two big scandals that are haunting the Hillary campaign. One of which is about the foundation and its ability to influence her schedule at the State Department, and also, I believe, the policy results at the State Department.
No evidence.
No, there is
no evidence about influencing policy, only about did she actually have meetings with people who also gave money to the Clinton Foundation.
Okay. David is now referring only to the most recent reporting and ignoring Clinton Cash, which has not been.
Clinton Cash has been a completely discredited book. Most of his sourcing was horrendously bad. It was shamed out of existence.
That is.
Except on your network, the Fox network.
My network is not the Fox network. And that
Going to be the Breitbart Trump network?
And that is not what happened. But the point is, Hillary has these two big scandals. Number one is about the foundation, and number two is about the emails. And the very big development today, which we might as well talk about, you know, we now have established, thanks to the FBI's disclosure last week, that in the month of March 2015, in a series of events, we went from, you know, litigation hold letters from some committees in Congress to a very specific litigation hold from Trey Gowdy, which was followed the very next day by a subpoena, which was acknowledged by the State Department and Secretary Clinton, and which then Secretary Clinton's staffers held a series of conversations with the people, the purveyors who were physically holding on to the emails, and authorized in less than 2 weeks' time after the subpoena, the destruction of emails that had been identified in the subpoena and in the letter from Gowdy and in prior litigation hold letters. Now, this is the most conclusive series of events in a specific period of time where law enforcement, or in this case, the United States Congress, has said, do not destroy anything. And we now have incontrovertible FBI approved evidence that they went and destroyed things. So there.
No,
we haven't even gotten to Julian Assange and the continuous release of emails, which is going to go on between now and pretty much the election.
Dave?
Well, number one, it's not incontrovertible. What the FBI report said is that, because I actually read the report.
I have read almost all of it.
Well, okay. I have read the report, and what the FBI report said is that an outside contractor.
That's the people that I'm talking about.
An outside contractor had an oops moment, an oh darn moment, when he realized that he was supposed to have deleted, because that was the standard course of practice, to delete things every, I think, 6 months or whatever, and had forgotten to and went and deleted it. There's no evidence that's been presented that he was ordered to, or that anybody told him to do, or that it was discussed.
I don't think David is up to speed. What happened is,
I read it.
There is an absolute link.
It's English.
There is an absolute link between a conference call that took place with Cheryl Mills, David Kendall, a representative of the purveyor, and one other figure. And then less than 5 days later, a purchase order was issued by the Clintons to destroy those emails. And less than 10 days after that, so on the 25th of March, 2015, the purveyor destroyed emails.
If it happened in the way you just described, she would have been indicted, and so would a whole bunch of other people. That did not happen.
She was not a part of the phone call, David. I don't know how much.
Fine, other people would have been indicted
Congressman Chaffetz is now demanding. He is demanding that they answer for this, because basically I think the FBI has done the country a favor by not indicting her, because it just would have gone to Loretta Lynch. Loretta Lynch would have buried it in the bottom of her, you know, right-hand drawer, desk drawer.
FBI doesn't indict.
And now,
and you are distracting from the fact that your candidate does not know his head from the hole in the ground, which we'll get to in the next segment.
Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling. We're playing Touche here Monday nights. Now Tuesday night is a Labor Day special.
It's a special.
It's a special Touche.
A special edition.
We'll be right back.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
Touche! Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy here on 720 WGN. Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Okay, so let's get past scandals for a sec, if we can, and get to some of the things that are going on when it comes to the candidates giving us their ideas, their platforms. Let's first talk about, foreign... I'm trying to think like what...
Foreign policy?
What policy, but I'm trying to think what today was for Donald Trump, because Donald Trump had an interview where... A retired general interviewed him, and he talked about, well, he mostly talked about the Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, it was a campaign event, and he decided to try to be interviewed by General Flynn, who is a big supporter of his. He almost put him on the ticket and is also a paid consultant for RT, the Russian news service. But in any event, when he was asking, so General Flynn was asking him softball questions because that's the whole point of this.
Like what?
He asked him about cybersecurity. Okay. So he asked him about cybersecurity, and Trump's response was, you know, cyber is becoming so big today. It's becoming something that a short number of years ago, wasn't even a word. Now cyber is so big, you know what they're looking at? And he goes on, and he clearly had no idea. He was asked about her immigration and security policy. He had no idea. He kept changing the subject or going back to his platitudes or going back to his, you know, empty assertions. And this is where I have expected the real problem's going to come, because he has taken no time to actually study this stuff, unlike, you know, governors who often will get into the presidential race that don't know anything about foreign policy. They'll take time to learn. Trump hasn't taken the time to learn, and now is where the rubber meets the road, and that becomes a
Chris,
problem.
Chris, let me ask you that, because you've been down on this candidate before, just the idea that, you know, sometimes he gets off script, he talks in platitudes.
Well, and I think that he's offended a lot of people unnecessarily.
Does he run the risk in this case of
boorish behavior?
Like the answer we just heard, the cyber stuff, where you get to September now, where you're like, we need to hear what your thoughts are on this, not just, you know, weird answers and how Hillary Clinton's
I feel terrible. A little shaky relying on Dave for impartial reporting on this. But
I'm just reading the
article. Going with what Dave has said, I'm concerned about it. But I think that's, for instance, you take a look at that compared to two things. Number one, what he did on the immigration thing, where I think it is obvious you might not like his position. I'm sure Dave doesn't agree with a lot of it or whatever.
I don't know which position you mean.
Many of his 10 points that he presented in the Phoenix speech. But even if you don't like what he says, you've got to say that was a very clear and a very substantive and a very well thought out speech. And it came on the day that he had gone down to Mexico and met with the president, and they had their conversation and they had their press conference afterwards. So I think that he is focusing on things at a different rate. That's certainly what Kellyanne Conway has said. But I think the other thing to which you must compare this stuff is, really, and this breaks my heart as an American, although I was warning about it 8 years ago, a lot of good that did. But we really had a Barack Obama humiliation tour in Asia over the last 4 or 5 days. He was humiliated by the Chinese at the airport. He was humiliated by the Filipino president. He was humiliated by Putin. He is humiliated in front of the entire Pacific region because he was absolutely, to his everlasting credit, I might point out, and against many of the currents in his own party, and that gives him even more credit in my head, to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He promised it. He said he would enact it. Now he hasn't gotten it through, and he's got both Trump and Hillary Clinton against it. Hillary said it was the gold standard. That's just another Hillary flip-flop. But Barack Obama goes to these international events now somewhat naked for his lack of diplomatic achievement.
So at some point in the remaining 60 some odd days, Chris and maybe Donald Trump will recognize that Barack Obama is not actually on the ballot, and they'll start running against the actual candidate, which is Hillary Clinton, who has,
Hillary,
by the way,
the
not been Secretary
of
State.
Disaster.
She was not the architect of this disaster.
She
yeah.
was the architect
yeah, she was
the, of our
like
reset
Chris Christie,
with
she
Russia.
Was there with the cones
what
pulling
exactly,
out the stairs.
No, what exactly? Who was the architect of our reset with Russia? Any history book worth its salt will say it was Hillary Rodham Clinton.
So you're changing the subject because you don't like to defend what I'm saying.
He was humiliated by Russia. She was the architect of the reset with Russia. He was humiliated by China. She was our Secretary of State. I mean, either these people are responsible for something. I know you spent the first term blaming Bush for Barack's inability to increase the economy, which he still can't do based on last week's employment numbers. And now you want to say Hillary was Secretary of State, but she can't.
By the way, now you see where Donald Trump learns his, I'm not going to answer the question. I'm just going to go to 14 other reasonably related or unrelated points.
People are so sick and tired of this failure.
But Chris,
they're listening to a guy like Donald Trump. God bless him.
For the record, he was not humiliated by the Filipino leader. The Filipino leader, who, by the way, they call the Filipino Donald Trump because he also was elected knowing nothing. And he's a nut job, just like your candidate, Donald Trump. The Filipino leader apologized for it the next day for saying, if I see him, I'm going to call him a son of a whatever and starts swearing at him. He's off his rocker, and so you're blaming Barack Obama, and yet Barack Obama did exactly what he was supposed to do, which is cancel the meeting. What Donald Trump suggested that he would do if he were in the position that Barack Obama was in China is he said he would have pulled up the stairs and taken off and left the meeting of the entire Asian Rim nations. And that is exactly the kind of impulsive, you know, reflex-laden foreign policy that you can expect from a guy who has no impulse control. That is a problem. And diplomats will tell you that this happens in China all the time. It happened to Bush. It happens to Obama. They like to test. It's a game that they play, but it doesn't change the ultimate purpose of what he's doing.
Absolute poppycock from David. They did this to Barack Obama.
I prefer malarkey.
It's absolute malarkey from David. They did it on his first visit, his first time that he went, I think, in 2009. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it to him on his last visit. Now, David can explain that away, or he can blame George Bush or George Herbert Walker.
Or I can point out the fact that your candidate doesn't know anything about foreign policy, and you still have not responded to that.
Well, I think he knows a hell of a lot more than the folks who cannot manage the relationship with China, nor the relationship with Russia, cannot.
Well, he said no. He knows
Syria.
More about fighting ISIS than the generals do. So, of course, we should just believe him because he relies on his big brain.
We have got a person as president whose Secretary of State is now on the ballot, who is saying in 2016 at this summit in September of 2016. There, you know what? It turns out there are many gaps between us and the Russians working together on Syria. This is Jimmy Carter Redux. Jimmy Carter in 1980 said...
Here goes another history lesson to avoid the question.
I did not know how seriously opposed to us the Soviets really were. It's the same thing with Barack Obama.
Barack Obama is not on the ballot.
Hillary Clinton was his Secretary of State, and she is running for the third Barack Obama term.
Not on foreign policy. Hillary Clinton has been way more hawkish than... Oh, that was interesting. Hillary Clinton has been way more hawkish on foreign policy than Barack Obama has. You know that. And you know that Hillary was advocating in Syria for the kinds of things that you were advocating
Trump was advocating
against.
She did such a great job. She won none of her arguments. So anyway, we're talking about somebody who says, make me the president. I can be bamboozled into voting for Iraq by George Bush, the pinhead. Or make me the president. I spent 15, 20, 30 years of my life at the peak of American government, and I still don't understand what classified information is. I mean, David, really, when are you going to understand that this woman is a career criminal?
Career criminal, thank you. As opposed to Donald Trump, the career scam artist who tried not once, not twice, but three times to con ordinary people out of their money with Trump University, Trump Network, and Trump Institute.
So you think
and who, by the way, declared bankruptcy six times and ripped off middle, small business people all over the East Coast, now of whom who are saying, I had to fire people. People lost their livelihoods and people committed suicide because my business was driven into bankruptcy because Donald Trump refused to pay me because he has no honor.
What did Vince Foster do?
He has no honor.
I want to ask you this question. So your position is we ought to elect the person who doesn't understand classified information.
She does understand classified information.
But that's not what she said.
None of those documents were properly marked. And by the way, let's talk about the FBI report just for a second. I know we're almost out of time, but the FBI report said something really interesting that nobody has covered. All these emails, these horrible, horrible emails, were confined to 13 people. 13 people were exchanging emails in this. It was a closed loop.
Hold on. Okay, you got your point in. Let me get my point in. Hillary, who you want to have as our president because she's so smart
Absolutely.
And so liberal and so female. Hillary was so dumb.
Excuse me?
She goes
Excuse
and
me?
She uses she goes and she uses her BlackBerry.
I guess this is what your candidate said today
me.
When he said that Hillary just doesn't
Ding,
look like a president.
The bell. There's the bell. We just heard the bell.
No,
Chris Rowling, Dave Lundy, the bell has rung. Touche.
She gave all of her secrets away to the Red Chinese.
This is like the end of Rocky II. Oh, they can't separate them here. Touche, Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling back on Monday. We'll be back. Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight, Doug Plank will be here. Doug Plank, the former Chicago Bears safety and now NFL analyst, will join us to talk about the Chicago Bears. They got the Houston Texans on Sunday. This is essentially the season has started. When you think about it, I mean, this is the week leading up to season one. We've seen a lot of movement on the waiver wire, and we'll talk about what to expect from the game on Sunday and the Bears season as a whole. Also, musician Andrew Bird. Andrew Bird, the multi-instrumentalist violinist, is going to be at the Pritzker Pavilion at Millennium Park tomorrow night. Tremendous musician. And, I mean, one with Chicago roots. He spent a ton of time here in Chicago. Now he's worldwide. But amazing to get a chance to talk with Andrew Bird here on The Download coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, my guest tonight at the big table has dedicated his life to helping improve communities, education, to stress the importance of parental development. Philip Jackson started the Black Star Project 20 years ago. Jackson's no stranger to Chicago. He's been part of the team that took over Chicago Public Schools in 1995. He was also the head of the Chicago Housing Authority back in 1999. But since that time, he's been working with several Chicago communities to promote peace, to curb violence, and to emphasize education. Jackson organized community peace surges this weekend. You may have read about it, to help combat violence in select neighborhoods. And today, he held his annual Million Father March to have fathers take their kids to the first day of school. As the stories of safe passages, teacher strikes, and homicides continue to dominate the news cycle, we turn to people like Philip Jackson to go beyond the headlines. And he's my guest tonight at the big table. Philip Jackson, thanks for being here.
This is a wonderful opportunity to really put out the word about what happened in Chicago this week.
Yeah, let's start with today. The Million Father March. This is something you've been doing annually for a couple of years
13
now.
13 years.
Talk about this. This is really a movement to get dads involved in their kids' education.
This started in a church basement on the south side of Chicago 13 years ago. St. Paul and the Redeemer, 50th and Dorchester, and we had 9 black men and 1 Latino man, and they pretty much, you know, were there 3 weeks before school started, and they said, well, what can we do? What can we do? We want to do something special. And so we took 2 ideas. One of the ideas was from the Nation of Islam, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Million Man March.
Right.
We said, let's go for a million. And we're going to try to get a million eventually, maybe not this year, men to take their children to school. And the other idea comes to us from South America, where on the last day of school, not the first, fathers and men go up to the schools to thank the principal, thank the teacher, thank the cook, thank the janitor, to thank anybody who had anything to do with educating their child. And so we said, well, let's combine the 2 ideas and let's call it the Million Father March.
Why is it important to have kids bring their, or for parents, especially fathers, to bring their kids to school on the first day?
It is very, very important. What we have found is that, number one, when fathers or men, surrogates, it doesn't even have to be the biological father, but when there's a man involved in a child's life, children learn faster, learn better, learn more, are more likely to graduate, have higher grade point averages, and conversely, they're less likely to get into trouble. Girls are less likely to become pregnant. Boys are less likely to engage in violence, less likely to become involved with gangs, simply from a father or a man, a male, just being in their lives. And so it's almost like magic. You know, the Chicago Public Schools, and they started today, they have challenges. Let us just say that.
Sure.
If they wanted, if they seriously wanted to address their challenges, they would get men involved. And so today at the Oglesby Elementary School, which is on the south side of Chicago, in one of those tough neighborhoods that we're talking about, where the peace surge happened, in one of those tough neighborhoods where we're talking about, there are not a lot of positive men. There are not a lot of good role models. We had 300 men, and men of all races, who came from everywhere and said, let us be the models for these children in this inner city school. The children were in heaven. The children were walking on air as they came into the school to the claps and the cheers of the men. And this didn't just happen in Oglesby. It happened in schools all across the city of Chicago. It happened in schools all across Illinois. It happened in 600 cities. We are in 600 cities right now. The big states are Texas, California, Florida, New York.
Is it amazing to see how this has grown over 13 years for you to be in Chicago and sit with the 8 or 9 people that were in that church basement that think now, wow, this is happening in so many different places around the whole country?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I do have to express my disappointment with Chicago. Chicago has not embraced the Million Father March. I mean, other cities.
How so? What do you mean? The city proper? The government?
The school system proper? Mm-hmm. They haven't embraced it. They think that other things are more important than getting men involved in the lives of children. And I'm here to tell you, no, I'm not here. Your police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, is here to tell you that if he doesn't get more support from parents, he has no chance. No chance.
That was
of
a big
the violence
mean,
in
the,
Chicago. He has none.
The two, and we're going to get to that as well in this hour. But the what I thought was interesting today is we saw parental involvement really sort of take center stage in two ways. One, safe passages.
Yes.
Which became like a big storyline again to make sure the kids had a safe route to get to school. For those listening at home who may be listening to WGN who don't understand that necessarily, what is a safe passage? Why is that important? Why is it important to have a sort of monitored space to get to school?
Well, what we also have found out, and Black Star, we've been doing this work for 20 years. So we know a little bit about children and we know a little bit about schools. And what we know is that children who fear violence do less well in school academically. They have a kind of post-traumatic stress syndrome from their communities, and they don't focus on learning. And so by providing safe passages, and that's a Chicago Public School program that actually provides monitors, if you will, on various street corners so that the children will know that they can walk up and down that street and they'll be safe. We have found, and the parents have found, and the schools have found, and the children have found, it's a program that works.
So it's not necessarily like a path that you find. It's the idea that kids know they're in a safe space because there's somebody on the corner.
Absolutely. And on many corners.
With the yellow penny
with
on.
The
right, right, right.
Yes.
We're talking with Philip Jackson. He's the head of Black Star Project. They're celebrating their 20th anniversary this year. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. And I want to get to the second part, which is about Eddie Johnson today when he addressed the violence and the big numbers over the weekend here in Labor Day
Huge
holiday.
Huge numbers.
He talked about parental involvement, and he talked about...
I think
about,
he's a little off base,
we'll get there. Philip Jackson, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. My guest at the big table, Philip Jackson. Philip Jackson, former head of the Chicago Housing Authority, and he's also the man behind Black Star Project, which was started 20 years ago, community activist, organizer. He was the man behind the Million Father Marches in Chicago today at Oglesby and other places, but also...
Born in public housing, grew up in a Robert Taylor home.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to ask you about growing up in Chicago. I want to get there. But the and also, I mean, so many different credits, because the one thing you did this weekend was something that... That surprisingly got less coverage than I thought it would. It was I actually saw it in the Washington Post, which was interesting that it was seemed to get national coverage as opposed to just local. It was this idea of the community peace surge. You know, surge is a word that's been used by police. It's been used over time, but you never really hear about it when it comes to peace. Talk about what goes into a community peace surge.
All right. Well, the reason that the community peace surge started and got its name is because the Fraternal Order of Police, a month and a half ago, said, you know what, we're taking off Labor Day weekend. And so we said, wait a minute, if you guys take off Labor Day weekend, we're going to have a purge. There are going to be, you know, just numerous killings and shootings. You're the police. You can't take off Labor Day weekend. So we thought, the Fraternal Order of Police, Dean Angelo, I believe, said, nope, our guys, they deserve a day off. We're going to tell them to be with their families. Good luck. And that's when we said, okay, they're planning a purge. They're planning to have chaos run through our communities. So what we did, we took out maps, police maps, if you will, and we looked at the communities, the 10 communities with the highest rates of violence.
Now, we've heard about this because the superintendent was on the news today talking about that there's select communities where most of this violence
that
comes from. What are some of the communities we're talking about here?
I'm going to do this, and I hate to do it because I don't like to demonize communities.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to mention them,
but I don't like to do it. Right.
All right. Inglewood, West Inglewood, New City, Auburn, Gresham, Roseland, South Shore, Chatham, North Lawndale, Austin, Garfield Park.
And this is where you set
Humboldt
up.
Park.
These are the neighborhoods where you set
the
up.
The toughest neighborhoods in the city. That's where, obviously, if you're going to take on crime, you got to go to where crime is. But I don't like to do that. You know what? We found that there are great people who live in all those communities. We found in each of those communities, there were people out working before we got there. They were doing the kind of things to make those communities better before the peace surge, before we got there. And that's why I don't like to say these are the 10 worst communities. I don't like to say that. Right. But the police
have made it clear in the last couple months. They're like, these are the select communities where it's happening.
That's probably one of the points, because people look at me and say, you know, you did a peace surge, so you're competing with the police. No. I support the police. I like the police. I mean, I actually like the concept. We need the police. So we weren't competing with them. We were working with them to bring peace to Chicago in the toughest communities in Chicago where they have not been able to.
How does it work? What does a community peace surge look like on the ground? What is it that you're doing to try and tend to support and promote peace and curb violence?
And so there were three major components of the community peace surge. Number one, get out. Come out of your house. Have some courage at night, during the day, during the morning. Knock on your neighbor's door. Meet your neighbors. Talk to people, young people on your blocks. So that's a major component. Just getting to know who your neighbors are in your community. Part of it was for the churches. Come out and pray on the blocks. For fraternities. Have parties on the block, but take over your neighborhood. Take over your blocks. Those blocks belong to you. Now, a lot of people said early on, they said, oh, man, you're going to get somebody killed. No one got killed doing what we were asking. There were a lot of people killed. 13 people were killed, but they were not killed doing activities of the peace surge. But that's number one. Number two, we asked people to clean up their blocks, clean up your front, clean up your whole street. Clean up your alley. Plant flowers. Pull up weeds. And so we think that possibly hundreds of tons of trash and debris were removed from these communities. Mm-hmm. We drove up and down the streets. We saw people in those same 10 communities that some people call bad communities. They were out cleaning up the whole block, two block, three blocks areas. Number three, we asked the people in those communities, talk to the young people, give them constructive things to do. You know, you create parties, create, you know, gyms, basketball. And we also told them, go up to the gangbangers, go up to the shooters and talk to them and let them know about the community peace surge and tell them, you know, just tell them honestly, you are destroying this neighborhood. You're destroying it, not just for us, for you. Many people did that. And guess what? They responded. The gangbangers, many of them responded. The shooters responded.
That's what I was going to ask.
Not enough of them. Not enough of them.
Because I want to get to the lessons, and we'll get to that coming up here, the lessons learned, because you put together a document about that. But I'm interested in when you, address a young man, a shooter, and tell them about the community peace surge. How do you do that? How do you talk to somebody who's already been sort of, this is their livelihood, this is what they do. They're killing this weekend.
Well, you see, you really have, and this is where, you know, I can't fault the police chief, but he really doesn't have an understanding of certain aspects of the communities that he's policing.
When he's saying that it's parents need to get involved.
When he's saying
like
that it's parents. When he's saying that it's the courts. When he's saying that it's guns. I mean, all of that is part of it, but that's not really the essence of it. The essence of it in these communities that we're talking about, those same 10 communities, it's despair. It's a loss of hope. It's a loss of opportunity. It's disinvestment in those communities. And you know, and a lot of people say, oh, see, I knew he was going to go there. I'm going there because our research shows that when young men have jobs, they don't shoot each other. When there are fully functioning families, then the children are not participating in those kind of activities. And so that's what the community peace search was. It was rebuilding communities, retransforming communities back into what communities used to be. Those same communities that I just named, and I'm going to name a few of them again. South Shore, Chatham, Auburn-Gresham, Inglewood, Austin. Those used to be some of the best communities in Chicago. There was not a community in Chicago better than those communities I just named. And many of those communities, they still have descendants of the people who lived in them. So it's kind of the same people. Mm-hmm. And so the question becomes, what happened?
You're right.
What changed? And that's where I don't think, and by the way, Eddie, Superintendent Johnson sounds like a good man and a reasonable man. But he's out of his league when it comes to trying to understand sociological.
You mentioned that. You mentioned that, you know, a couple weeks ago it was guns and you know, it's there's a lot of factors that go in and the police chief seems to point to. But today's was all about parental involvement. He says people come to him when he's back in his neighborhood and they say, where are the parents? Where are the parents? You've been involved in, you know, you do parental development.
For 20 years. Parental development.
Is the superintendent wrong in that sense? I mean, it may not be the overall wholeness of it, but it is a part of it.
Yeah. You see, I don't think he's wrong, but I don't think that he's the one to actually make this statement. So I'm not saying he's wrong. We need the people, kind of like myself, who've been trying to get this city to focus on parent development for 25 years. To be the ones to bring it up be the ones recognized.
Yeah, you mean the government. You mean the not just the city of Chicago as a whole, you, me, and the people around. You're talking about like institutionalized parental development.
City, everybody, and I am talking about the people as well, because we have found that parental development is a key aspect of community development, that you really can't do serious and successful community development without parent development. And so the question becomes, okay, then where are the systems? You know, where are the programs that actually do what you say is needed? And so the question should be asked to Superintendent Eddie Johnson. All right, sir, you say we need more parent development. Where are the programs? Who's working on it? And right now, he's going to have to answer you. There's really nothing out there. Well, then he's not qualified at that point to say we need more parent development.
Philip Jackson is my guest tonight. He is the man behind Black Star Project, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary this season or this year. I guess it's not anniversary, but something that.
No, it's boots on the ground, fighting the problem.
Right, 20 years, commemorating yes, 20 sir. Years That's of right. being a community group. Philip Jackson, my guest at the big table. We'll come back after the news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Here's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Philip Jackson, the man behind Black Star Project, 20 years in business. We'll talk about that coming up as well as your life, Philip. I mean, you were CEO of the CHA, a guy who grew up in public housing at Robert Taylor.
Born in Aug Hill Gardens.
Really?
Yes.
See, we got to talk. I mean, there's so much that goes. I mean, for you to have seen Chicago through those eyes, through that experience.
I attended 11 Chicago public schools and became the chief of staff for public schools.
You got a lot going on. All right, so let's talk about the community peace surge that you did this weekend and the lessons, because today you spent time putting up the lessons that you learned from this
Absolutely.
Weekend. So talk about, because on first glance, you would think a community peace surge was about curbing violence.
Right.
This ended up being the most violent holiday weekend of 2016 and one that continues a trend that shows us having, you know, dating back 10 years, 15, 20 years. So do you, first let me ask this question. Do you see it as a success or a failure?
I see it as a success. But let me create the context for this. In Chicago right now, this year so far, we've had about 3,000 shootings. 3,000 people being wounded here in Chicago. The University of Chicago Crime Lab says that every gunshot wound costs the city of Chicago $1 million in societal costs, total costs. Everything from going to the emergency room, the policemen who get involved, the long-term care, the image of Chicago, $1 million. Now, we've had 3,000 people who've been shot. So right now, easily, $3 billion is down the toilet just from people being shot. August, the most violent month in the past 20 years. 481 people shot, 81 people murdered. Last weekend, the weekend before last, 72 people shot. This weekend, 66 people shot, 53 shot, 13 kills, 66 total. We need something. Whatever we're doing is not working. And that's where we came up with the peace search. We said, we've got to get the community involved. We know, as everyone knows now, the police by themselves have no chance of stopping violence in Chicago. You know, they've got this algorithm that they use, and they can predict, so they say, who the shooters are going to be. And they also say they can predict who's going to be shot.
This is the 12 to 1400.
That is correct.
There's a list. Right.
And the question becomes, if you know who the shooters are, and you know where they live, and you know who their victims are, why can't we stop the shooting? And so, really, it's much more complex than that. So we learned a lot of lessons this week from the community peace surge. Number one, we learned that no peace surge can be one day, one weekend, one week, one month, or even one year. And so we learned that we went about it the wrong way, thinking that we could start from zero and come up to 100 in one weekend and stop violence. However, in many ways, that's what the police are doing. So they say, we're going to prepare for that big holiday weekend. That's not how you do it. You'll always be behind.
And how do you do it then? So holistically, you need to invest into a 10, 15, 20-year process.
At the very least, for next Labor Day, we should have started preparing today. Now, that's at the very least. Possibly, we should have started preparing for next Labor Day 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
So it's a way we have to shift the way we think.
Oh, absolutely. The way we think is a huge part of the problem as to why we're in the condition that we're in Chicago.
We start every day fresh when we shouldn't be starting
absolutely.
Fresh.
And that's what
building.
We do, and that's what we're encouraging. And now, let me give you just one idea. And so the police are really big on these raids. And so this past week, they arrested 77 gang members. That means that they didn't learn a lesson from the 4th of July. The 4th of July, they arrested, I think, 125 gang members, and they had the worst 4 weeks of shooting that they ever had. So this week, they said, well, let us arrest 77 and look at what it gave us for the final total.
What's the correlation? What do you think the issue is?
The correlation is that many times, by arresting gang members, you actually create a little more chaos in the communities. There's almost a kind of sick and maybe sad stability when you leave those gang members in place. Unfortunately, I don't like to say that. But once you pull them out, now there are two, three, four other people vying for that same position and willing to shoot and kill to take that.
That's interesting. I didn't think about this. So it's almost like they audition, if you want to say
way,
to say they want to take over that corner. Or I'm not using the right lingo, but that the concept, right?
Yeah. We found from this community peace search that the majority of big businesses in the city of Chicago have no interest in stopping violence in Chicago. They don't have an interest. They don't see the connection between violence and Inglewood and doing business on North Michigan Avenue.
And where do you get where? That's a lesson learned from the community peace surge. What is
that's a lesson?
It's a lesson that nobody invested.
No
cared,
one invested.
Nobody,
Zero. We had zero investment. And so here's another lesson. The foundation community here in Chicago are emotionally unattached to the issue of violence in Chicago.
Do you think that might change in the sense that it becomes a national storyline, it becomes a negative mark on Chicago's reputation, that foundations and big businesses and corporations here may go, I want to get involved now because my New York brethren are talking about it. My California brethren are talking about it. I want to get involved now. Is that possible that might happen?
Right now. Right now. The violence in Chicago has become bad for business on North Michigan Avenue, on State Street, throughout Chicago. Excuse me. And they're finding out now that they cannot contain the violence. You cannot keep the violence in Inglewood. You cannot keep the violence in Roseland. It is now seeping over onto the north side, into the Gold Coast, into Lincoln Park. That same violence that the business community was not interested in, that foundations were emotionally unattached to, that same violence is now coming to every part of Chicago. And now nobody is safe. Now the people on the north side are as nervous as the people who live in Woodland.
Let me just say that is by the idea that foundations and corporations have not invested,
they've disinvested.
When they get to shootings on North Lakeshore Drive or shootings over here in Gold Coast or right here on Michigan Avenue, does that kind of spillover, does that grab their attention?
Well,
do they say, okay, now I want in because it was one of my employees that was caught in the crossfire?
No, I really don't think they care. But what you said earlier, I think, might have more sway. When other national foundations around the country, when other Fortune 50 companies, Fortune 250 companies start looking at these guys and go, why are you letting that violence happen in your city? You know, what are you doing to stop it? Then these companies will take heed. You know, unfortunately, money talks. And when they start getting hit in the pocketbook, and when these foundations, when their, you know, pristine reputations start taking a hit, then they're going to start listening to the community and doing more to help the community stop the violence. Right now, two things. Big business is uninterested in stopping the violence. Foundations are emotionally detached. So whether it was, 56 people shot, 66, 160, they don't really care. They're going to keep doing what they're doing. That's what we have found from the community peace surge.
All right, give me one more lesson.
Well,
I know you've got millions, but
I've got quite a few, but I'll give you one.
Give me one, yeah.
The violence in Chicago is related to violence in America. So what's happening in Chicago is a macrocosm of what's happening all across the country. We've been getting reports in Black Star all day that many cities around the country had similar kinds of violence, now, such as Baltimore. Now, Baltimore didn't have 66 shootings.
Right.
They had 20. But Baltimore is
a lot smaller than Chicago, right.
And so when we're getting these reports from all over the country. Now, I do have to say, New York.
Yeah, that's the one everyone will say that's an anomaly because why
they had two murders.
Right.
Two in New York.
Why? Why do they have two and we have 52?
No, two murders. And right. We had 13.
13. Okay, yeah. So why do we have 13 and they have two?
Yeah. Well,
I don't know the answer to that. Part of it is
absolutely, I believe, the way that Chicago, and this is Phillip speaking, the way that Chicago is treating certain communities that are mostly African American, that are mostly poor, that are mostly, you know, lowly educated. The way that Chicago is treating those communities is a big part of what is causing the violence. In other cities like New York, for various reasons, they're not doing those same kind of things.
Phillip Jackson is the head of the Black Star Project, which is commemorating its 20th year in business. Let's take a quick break. Come back and I want to talk about your life. I want to talk about growing up. We've thrown nuggets around about your bio, but let's talk about your relationship to Chicago, what you've seen through your eyes. Phillip Jackson, my guest here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin, my guest in studio at the big table, Philip Jackson. Philip Jackson, former CEO of the Chicago Housing Authority, chief of staff at Chicago Public Schools back in 1995. He now runs Black Star Project, which is 20 years old this year.
That is correct.
That's unbelievable to think about. Okay, Philip, what I really want to get at, I mean, you've got such an experience as a Chicagoan from growing up, born and raised in public housing, growing up Robert Taylor Homes. For you to be a CEO of the Chicago Housing Authority, you've seen Chicago in so many different ways. Let's start from your days growing up in Robert Taylor. Is it better or is it worse when it comes to violence, when it comes to crime, when it comes to what we're seeing in the streets of Chicago today?
Yeah, well, for certain communities. And first of all, let me start with this. I love Chicago. Now, I've traveled to many countries. I've traveled to you know, the continent of Africa, the continent of Asia, the continent of Europe. You know, so I've been many places. I always come back to Chicago. I love Chicago. So let's start there. Chicago is two different cities. There is one city that is violent. There is one city that, for the most part, is not. There is one city that is poor. There is one part of the city that is not. There is one city where your children are going to get one of the worst educations in the world. And then there's one part of the city where your children are going to get one of the best educations in the world.
Yeah.
So that's the context that we're living in.
Has that always been the case, though? I mean, from you and growing up in Chicago, was it like that then?
Well, it was a little bit different because when I was growing up, there was much more opportunity. So if we just look at downtown Chicago right now, which I used to work. By the way, you didn't mention I was a corporate guy. I was VP operations, senior vice president of operations for Crocs and Brentanos as well and other things. So I'm a corporate guy. But when I worked in these same offices, when I built stores up and down Michigan Avenue, I did that. This was a different city demographically. For every white person I saw a black person. You know, it was racially more diverse, especially in the business district.
Than today.
Today, really? I can walk up and down a block during the middle of the day, and I may not see a black person. Now, and by the way, and I'm willing, I hope you're going to ask me, I need you to ask me what part of that is the fault of black people. And I want to answer that. But there's also a fault of the rest of the city of Chicago for creating this space where, unfortunately, black children don't feel welcome and where black children can't thrive and succeed. And as I said, I want to talk about the fault or the responsibility of black people.
Let's go there. I mean, the black community, you saw that with Superintendent Johnson today talking about parental involvement. There's been talk about, you know, pull up by the bootstraps, you know, hard work, get your kids off the corner. A lot of finger pointing at community. What role does the black community play in violence in the city?
All right. Well, first of all, finger pointing means nothing. Even if it's coming from the superintendent of police, that means nothing. The question that has to be asked to the superintendent of police, you want parent development? What are you going to do to create and produce parent development in those communities that you say we need parent development in? And if you're not going to do anything, you really shouldn't talk about it. Now, the black community, in my opinion, plays a major role in our own dysfunctionality. Our churches have failed us miserably. Our elected officials have failed us. Our civil rights groups have failed us. And that filters down to the community level. And so our communities start to unravel. And that filters down into the homes. Our homes start to unravel. You know, a lot of people say, well, people ought to. They should just do what's right. That's not the way the world works. The world works in a very intelligent, systematic, coordinated fashion. And so we have to create structures and systems that can assist and help people do these things that we say we want them to do. Simply to say, you know, you ought to take care of your kids and not help people and not right. guide people and not give people assistance in doing what you say that they should do, then you're a part of the problem. And so once again, the African-American community, we're asking for the absolute wrong things. For me personally, I could care less, you know, if I have white neighbors. That's not what I'm here for. I want to have good neighbors. And I want good neighbors of all races. And I want to live in communities, even if it's an all-black community, where people are working together to build the communities. And we're not, the black community is absolutely not doing enough of that.
Okay, so you were the CEO of the CHA right when the towers, Stateway Gardens, Robert Taylor, they decided—
Cabrini-Green.
They decided to take those down. Mayor Daley was going to go in a different direction where we were going to have more spread out, integrated public housing in the city, not these sort of high-rise communities. I've heard the theory, and I want to get your take on this as the CEO of the CHA, former CEO of the CHA, that when that happened, members of those communities were sort of cast out into other communities. They had to find their way to different places. The housing that they were promised never came through. Things just went awry, and it put a lot of stress on different communities, and that's what we're seeing when we see violence sort of in 2016 manifest itself, is that a lot of sort of mixing of communities and lack of social services. Is that accurate? Is that theoretical? Is that something you believe in?
Well, first of all, it wasn't that Mayor Daley decided to go into a different direction. It's that the United States Congress and HUD said that if it is cheaper to issue a Section 8 housing choice voucher than to rehab a hard unit of public housing, then you shall issue the Section 8 voucher. And what that meant is that all those towers of terror, and I lived in them, they had to come down. So it wasn't that Mayor Daley decided.
Okay.
So they had to come down. Not only did they come down in Chicago, they came down
throughout
the United States of America. And that was a good decision. What the bad decision was that as those houses came down, the social services that were there, they did not follow the people into the, they did not follow the people into South Shore. They did not follow the people into the South Suburbs. They didn't follow the people into Inglewood or on the West Side. And so those people came out of this social service rich environment, went into the communities without enough services to support them. And those communities rapidly depreciated. And so, once again, those are the people in charge who made bad decisions then that caused a lot of the problems.
All right, let me ask you this. For Black Star, okay, so you guys have been a service, and we talk about, when we talk about Black Star Project, it's social services, it's... they're everything. I mean, everything from education to tutoring to everything in between. How do we bring those communities that had seen rapid decline since that happened, 15, 20 years now, to a point where they can rebuild, where they can sort of have some optimism, where they can fight despair?
Yeah, yeah. Black Star is in the transformation and enlightenment business. That's what we do. Now, we do programs. We do mentoring programs, tutoring programs, parent development. We do more parent development than anybody in the city of Chicago, including the Chicago Public Schools. So we do that. We do college exposure. We do career exposure. Those are the kind of things that we do. So for your question, we're going to need a lot more of that. The people that we're talking about, the families who can stop the violence, they need to be connected to services that can help them stop the violence. And by the way, we're really talking dollars here, and it is so easy for us to send these people, to send young black men downstate to prisons where they're ransomed for $40,000, $50,000 a year versus maybe sending them to Harvard for $50,000, $60,000 a year. And so we've got to change our mindset as a city, as a country. The black community has got to change its mindset. Once again, the black community is greatly responsible, I feel, for a lot of the problems that we have. But it's going to take new think. It's going to take new ideas in order to fix this. And all I'm hearing from Chicago are the same old ideas that are going to leave us in the same position or worse in the next 3, 5, 10, 20 years.
Philip Jackson is the man behind Black Star Project, which is 20 years old this year. Philip Jackson, my guest at the big table. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
I really appreciate this opportunity.
You gotta let the fight song go. Well, what a weekend. As I joked about earlier in the show, it was as if the Bears auto-drafted in their fantasy football. And they're like, what? I got six tight ends? Oh, I better hit the waiver wire. That's how it felt. A lot of movement, which I can't tell if that's a good thing or a bad thing when it comes to a team in the final week of preparation before the regular season begins. But I know somebody who does. Doug Plank, of course, our regular contributor here to the download, famous number 46 and an NFL analyst. Doug, thanks for joining us, buddy. I know it's Tuesday.
No. You know what? I think everybody, even on the football team, is anxious to find out just who are the Bears this weekend.
Yeah. What do you look at? I mean, is it a good thing or a bad thing that they made all these changes in one day when other players came available on the waiver wire?
You know, I just kind of chuckled when I saw everybody get up in front of the reporters and talk about all the great talent that was secured and, you know, at the last minute, you know, in spite of other people trying for it. To my evaluation, I think a whole bunch of activity right at the very end of training camp is not good. I mean, there are some times, I guess, that you can possibly pick up some very gifted players. But, you know, just like anything else, I've been on plenty of teams that we let go very gifted players physically, but there were other issues that really nobody wants to talk about. You know, whether it's locker room issues, just pettiness in terms of or even behavior issues, which potentially might bring some harm onto the team later on. So I'm not saying that's what happened here with the Chicago Bears, but, you know, I wouldn't be too quick to be picking up players, you know, and then acting like, geez, we got everything in place now. This was such a great thing to happen to us. You know, we're really lined up to get on and play the Texans.
All right, so let's talk about what they did. I mean, obviously, the big news here in Chicago is Robbie Gould, the kicker, who yes. has served so admirably. I made a joke at the beginning of the show, too. Remember when we were worried that someone would miss a kick? Like that was yes. not the thing with Robbie Gould. For so many years, he was just money. He's faltered later in his career, and I didn't know this, but he was the most expensive kicker in the NFL. Were you surprised by the move to cut Robbie Gould, or is that just the way the NFL works these days?
I think, you know, kickers especially, when they start getting older towards the end of their career, I don't think there's any sympathy. And, you know, let's face it. I mean, everything about the business of being in the National Football League is about money. You know, it's not about even how good the player is. It's how much money the player can bring to the football team, you know, through his wins, through his behavior, you know, through endorsements, all those sort of things. I'm not saying it's all follow the money, but, you know, the reality is when you're in a professional sport, the best way to generate revenue is to win games and get players that are talented and that have gifts that can go out there and make big plays. And I think the combination of what happened last year to Robbie, as far as in some of the games that he missed key situations, yeah. games that would have won, kicks that would have won the game for the Chicago Bears, and then you couple it with a really inconsistent preseason, and I think that's the reason why he's not on the team.
All right, let's talk about the other big, I guess the big news is Josh Sitton, the Green Bay offensive lineman, the guard comes to Chicago after the Packers let him go. Now, they had him at $5 million a year, and they kind of intimated that maybe this was about money, cost-cutting, because they had someone behind him that wasn't getting paid as much. The Bears quickly yes. paid him $7 million a year. He's getting paid more. Is the guy worth it? What do we know about him? He's a Pro Bowler. I mean, does he fit the scheme, and is he the kind of guy that we're going to be looking for big things out of here in Chicago?
Well, I think, you know, certainly their quarterback hopes he's still have something left. Jay, I think, you know, he was excited about having Josh Sitton come in.
Yeah, right.
You know, I think he's been a good football player in the past. You know, I think he's got good fundamentals. I don't know what his health situation is, what his durability is. You know, obviously there's a reason why a team lets him go. I mean, maybe the Packers have incredible depth on the offensive line. I just think, you know, I've always said, you know, being a defensive back, I really feel like, you know, it's what happens on the line of scrimmage that really dictates your failure or success. And I think for any success to take place for the Bears this year, they have to have a solid front offensive line. And I think Josh Sitton could be a big part of that. It just gives you an idea, though, what the Packers must have if they're letting a guy like him go. And, you know, I think really the offensive line is going to be the key to success or failure this year for the Bears because, you know, if they can't protect their quarterback and give him an opportunity to distribute the ball, they're going to be in big trouble.
Well, he's going to be out by game three. We're going to be looking for Jimmy Clausen off the waiver wire. All right, so I'm interested in that. How, you know, from your vantage point from playing the game, last year the Chicago Bears moved Kyle Long at the last minute to from right to left, left to right. This year they're doing the same thing by slotting Josh Sitton in. There's talk about Cody Whitehair getting under center. I mean, how easy is it for these big guys to be able to move positions, to be able to go from the left side to the right side how hard is it for them to do that the last minute?
Justin, it sounds like it would be very easy. It's only a matter of a few feet, you know, as far as on the position on the offensive line. But I can only tell you, it's like night and day playing different positions. It looks the same when you're watching it on television or you're sitting in a seat down at Soldier Field. I'm telling you right now, though, from a player's perspective, it is totally different. You start getting towards the outside of that line, and you're picking up defensive ends and even linebackers coming off the edge. It's a whole different ball game than just being on the inside at the guard position. And, you know, the other thing is it's who you have playing next to you also. You know, there's not really much time to start, you know, knowing what the guy next to you is going to do. You know, one of the great things that I had as a Chicago Bear was having Gary Fensick right next to me as a strong safety. I knew where Gary was going to be. I knew what he was going to do. Even if I missed a play or whatever, I knew what he was going to cover up for me. You know, you get in the offensive line like this and you have a lot of new players and new faces, you get back to that huddle. I tell you, it's not that feeling of confidence like, wow, we are all going to work together under any circumstance. We're going to know what each other does. And, you know, I just look at even the first game they're going up against the Houston Texans, you know, and they have a very, very impressive defensive line. I mean, we're going to find out real fast just what this offensive line is made of.
And J.J. Watt is going to play, they said. And the Houston Texans, I know a little bit about the Houston Texans from Hard Knocks. Not going to lie to you, last year's HBO show. But the Houston Texans, I mean, they're bringing Brock Osweiler in, who, you know, the Bears saw against Denver last year and should have beat the Broncos in that game. But you know, Danny Trevathan is on the other side of the ball this week, and there seemed John Fox knows a little bit about Brock Osweiler. Do you feel like there's any sort of competitive advantage the guys that have played with Osweiler and know him and, you know, are part of the guys that drafted him that are available or are part of the other side of the sideline?
You know what's funny? You know, especially in situations where players play against each other, the coaching staff will get that player aside, you know, and say, is there anything that could hurt us? Is there any calls? Is there any plays? Is there any favoritisms, you know, that you want to do or he would know about in terms of calls or anything like that? So it's really a question and answer situation by the coaching staff so that they get into a game situation and they are going to try to do everything they can to make sure that if he thinks he knows what you do, how you do things, how you throw, all that sort of thing, you know, it's going to be a situation where they're going to purposely, you know, throw what a wrench into the quagmire, so to speak, and make sure that there is no advantage in terms of anticipating what one player is going to do just from a past experience. So I think it's going to be a really, really interesting matchup. And I think it's really, really going to tell a lot about the Chicago Bears and just what their capacity is, you know, in terms of just being able to hold up against this Houston line, which has, you know, Clowney and Cushing, and you mentioned J.J. Watt, McKinney. I mean, those guys, they're experienced and they know how to get to the quarterback.
All right, so let's talk about the Houston Texans. I mean, obviously last year they went to the playoffs, but they had a mediocre season. They either finished 9-7 or 8-8 for whatever it was in that terrible AFC South, I guess it is. But talk about this team. I mean, is this a team? What do the Bears have to worry about when it comes to the Houston Texans?
Well, you know, it's not a team that they play very often, so it's not one of those things like, oh yeah, we know exactly what they're going to do. I do think they have more veterans on their football team. You know, I think that's a huge plus, especially early in the season. And it's okay to have rookies and young players And, but you know, the fact is when you have a large changeover in your football team, I mean, you look at the Bears draft this year, I think everybody that was drafted except one made the team. So it gives you an indication of just, you know, the youth and the change of roster that's going to be on the Chicago Bears team. This is a team that's never really played together, you know, in terms of the bulk of the lineup. So, you know, is there going to be some learning experiences and all that sort of thing? And I think most importantly, like I said, for Jay Cutler, I think he's going to try to find out how good this offensive line is, what kind of routes can he call, and where can he throw the football to guys that are dependable, that can catch the ball and continue to pick up first downs.
All right, so as we think about this game, I got it for a win. I think they're going to beat the Texans. I think they're going to run the table. They're going to be 14-2. but you know, the dynamics change in the NFC North. Teddy Bridgewater goes down. The Vikings now have a lot of question marks at that position. The Packers, of course, are the gold standard in the league and in the division. But the Bears' chances look a little bit. Are you a little bit more optimistic about what the Bears might be able to do this season because of that injury?
There's no doubt. I mean, Bridgewater, he was a quality quarterback, and whether you liked him or not, I mean, he maybe not had the strongest arm in the league, but you know, that wasn't his assets. I mean, he was quick. He could get rid of the ball very fast. You could tell that he really meshed with their offense. You know, he really created some different looks for the defense. I really believe that with that injury, the Chicago Bears should slip into at least a preseason prognosis in terms of, you know, behind Green Bay. You know, I think that they've got a good enough team, you know, especially because of what happened at the quarterback position for Minnesota. The Chicago Bears are going to be able to take advantage of that. And I think that, you know, it's going to be really difficult for the Vikings now. You know, you have a guy that's been so productive and so well-liked by Bridgewater, and then all of a sudden he's gone. I'll tell you what, it's a huge absence. And I know they're struggling up there trying to make all the pieces fit. It's a matter of, you know, the Bears have to, you know, come to play. They have to protect. The offensive line is a huge challenge in terms of protecting the quarterback. And let's face it, the defense, you know, they've got to start shining and start being more physical and more like what everyone expects out of a Chicago Bear defense.
CBS Sports today did their preseason rank for the Bears. They had the Bears in the power ranking 31st out of 32 teams. Where do you see this Bears team? What's your preview as this will be the last time we talk to you before they kick off on Thursday, and then also, of course, the Bears on Sunday? What do you see the Bears finishing out? Do you think they have any chance whatsoever to compete for a playoff position?
You know, it all depends on, you know, how those records all fit. You know, as far as I don't think they're going to win the division. You know, I think then it gets down to a wild card choice. You know, they still have a number of injuries, you know, that, you know, have slowed them down. I mean, you just start looking even, you know, with Pernell McPhee and, you know, having knee surgery and, you know, there's just a lot of guys. I mean, their pass rush should be significantly better. You know, I think Leonard Floyd, certainly a very fast kid, young, Willie Young. I mean, they got some good guys that can rush the quarterback. I like their linebackers. I think their linebacker corps is very physical and it's very sound. You know, their secondary, I thought, improved as the season went on. But I think, you know, the Bears are probably looking at, you know, around a 500 season again. You know, I would think, you know, somewhere around 8-8. The thing is, you know, as I said before, you know, the one thing that they got to flip the stakes on are what they do at Soldier Field. You know,
that
1-7
last year,
that last year, it doesn't get it done. And, you know, now you had two more exhibition losses to it. You know, those fans are going to come frustrated early in the season.
Doug Plank, Mr. Number 46, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you Monday after the Bears beat the Texans on their route to being 14-2.
Yes, go Bears. Go
All right,
Bears.
Doug,
I'm
thanks,
looking
man.
Forward to it. Thanks, Justin.
All right, coming up, very excited about this. Andrew Bird going to join us at the 9:30 news here. Great as that. He's playing Pritzker Pavilion, Millennium Park tomorrow night. There you go. Andrew Bird. So good. Bowl of Fire, his solo work. I'm amazed. I mean, listening to his stuff, his new record's amazing. And I'm looking forward to talking to him. That's coming up here right after the 9:30 news.
I was going to Old Navy, Pete, you'll like this, yesterday. I had to pick up a water bottle. I was kind of annoyed because it was like a last-minute shopping thing for... There's a specific water bottle that they have in the tchotchkes when you check out that we use for my son's lunch.
Yeah.
And we're like, you know, my wife's like, oh, we got to use that one. I'm like, can't we just go to, I got a water bottle. I got a ton of them. So we got to go up there, right? We walk up on there, news crew out in front of Old Navy.
Last minute shoppers.
You know, they got it out there. I automatically introduced myself. I wish I could be on camera. I'm Justin Kaufman from The Download, 7 to 11.
You should have done the interview and have them put it on the
I was thinking about it afterwards. I was like, oh, man, I should have, because I could have been funny. You know, maybe it was a funny guy. Oh, let me tell you about that. You know, and then it'd be like, local host. Yeah. But I recused myself. But my wife and my son were on it. Yeah.
They were on the news?
Yeah, they were on the news. They made it to the 5 o'clock news. My wife refused to watch it because she's like, listen, I was in shorts and a tank top. I didn't look good. My hair was all frizzy.
That's when you say no to the interview.
Yeah, she didn't want to. She just feels bad. She said afterwards, she's like, I just feel bad. And I like this about my wife because I feel bad because they're out there in the sun and probably everybody just like kind of like a homeless guy. Can I get some change? No, I don't have any. Sorry. You know, the newscasters are just a step up, you know, in the way that they, can I get an interview? No, not right now.
Yeah.
All right. So she did it. And they asked, it was funny how they did it. They're like, hey, what are you getting, the last minute supplies? Yeah. Are you doing blah, blah, blah? Yeah. What are you going to get? What do you think, little guy? Yeah. And she goes, what do you think of the teacher strike?
Oh.
Yeah. Jack that in, right. Slid it in right at the end. And then my wife was like, well.
Gotcha journalism.
Yeah. She goes, well, you know, I hate to get out of the routine, but you know what? I understand the situation, and that means I'll have a little bit more time with the young guy, you know, young fella.
Well, give it up. What station and who was the reporter?
Let me just say it was a – okay, I'll give you a hint. It was Channel 2, and it was Dorothy Tucker. Wait, oh, God, I can't believe I
– Dorothy. Come on.
She was great. She was great. But when they – but I told her what they were going to do. I've been around news long enough to go – they wanted that last answer.
Yeah.
They wanted the teacher strike. They don't care about what Miles is going to wear. You know, they don't care. So they're like, okay, so the idea was when we watched the deal, you know, they put her name up and they said, and some are worried about the blah, blah, blah. And they just took the first part where she said, you know, I'm really worried about the routine, interrupting the routine. And then they made a nice little cut right there, you know, to another thing. They didn't do the second part. They just did the first part. So now, you know, teachers hate us.
Oh, man, that stinks.
Whatever. I mean, it could be worse.
I mean, yeah,
it's not like she said anything inflammatory. She just said, oh, we get started in a routine. In a routine it is.
I never do that up here.
No, I've never heard that. No. I like to talk in really long run-on sentences where they can't really find where you're supposed to cut, because if you try to cut, it will not make sense, and then you want to get never breathe. That's the key with a newscast. Never breathe.
Well, but
I invited Dorothy on.
Yeah, but then what they do, though, the trick there is if you got somebody with one of those run-on sentences, what they do is then they just fade down the B-roll, and then the reporter comes back on with the rest of the story.
When you watch E, and they're doing a story on the Kardashians, and they'll do something, and then they just take a shot of Kim Kardashian going, yeah, that's what I said. And you're like, it feels real good. You're like, that has nothing to do with the story, and you pulled that from something from 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked my wife once, we were watching E! News, I'm like, is that they took that out of context. She goes, it's kind of a bit they do, where they're like, with the celebrities, they always kind of just say, you could tell. And I'm like, I'm not sure that everyone knows it's a bit that, you know, Kanye West just says, I'm humbled, you know, after a story about him not being humble. You know what I mean? They just take it out of context.
Hindsight being what it is, your wife should have gone to Dorothy and said, you know what, Dorothy, I'd really like to stick with the water bottle issue right now for my son. We're going in here to Old Navy. And
listen, don't you have something? Don't you want to ask about the water bottle?
Quite frankly, we have a drawer full of water bottles, but my son wants a particular type of water bottle.
Particular. Oh, my son, my wife. Come on.
You know where.
My son doesn't care.
You know, Dorothy. You get it, right? Water bottle issue.
And the water bottle issue continues. We'll never know.
What's the deal with the water bottles?
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman.
If you're looking to end your summer in style, there may be no bigger show than the one this Wednesday at the Pritzker Pavilion. Chicago, put your hands together for the return of Andrew Bird.
Now when you wake up, night's falling, someone is by your side. Pull it together, darling, you're not alone. But when you break up, sky's falling, no one is on your side. Spoon to the laundry, darling, you're all alone. And when you wake up, another sunrise, another breakup, ship is capsized. And when you wake up, another sunrise, another breakup, ship is capsized. Just to keep it your life for.
Andrew Bird has been a part of Chicago music scene for about 20 years, whether it be the Squirrel Nut Zippers or his band The Bowl of Fire or his solo career. Andrew Bird and his violin have been a steady, unique voice in the world of indie rock. The multi-instrumentalist was born in Lake Forest, went to school at Northwestern, spent years playing music in all sorts of bars, clubs, and churches in the area. Now it's the Pritzker Pavilion in Millennium Park. His latest album, his 13th studio album, is called Are You Serious? And Andrew Bird joins me on the line now. Andrew, thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
Sure. Good to be here.
Talk about the feelings of coming back to Chicago to play a place like Pritzker Pavilion in Millennium Park. I mean, for all the time that you spent here in Chicago playing in the indie rock scene, what are the feels that come up when you get a chance to play a big show like this?
Well, I definitely get a little more wound up for it than every other night on the tour, but it's pretty heavy, and I just have to try to stay calm.
Let's talk about your I want to talk to you about being in the Chicago music scene, but also your early influences. I read that you started playing violin as a young kid, and it was mostly classical music. What was the impetus to get out of classical and move to more of a folky sound?
I learned classical music by ear. By the time I learned how to read music, I didn't need to or want to. So I learned, even though it was Bach and Mozart, it was kind of like folk music anyway. They were just melodies. And so for me, making the leap to more ear-based music was not a big deal. And the first stuff I started playing Irish music around Chicago, which is a huge tradition in Chicago. So I would go and play in pubs on Sundays, even though I was playing in orchestras during the week. So I just enjoyed the more social, casual way of sharing music that way. And I played in a punk ska band when I was 19. And then I got into early jazz and started playing with the Squirrel Nut Zippers. And, you know, but yeah, Chicago was, for most of my 20s, was all very local. You know, it was all playing the clubs around town.
It's interesting. I mean, the idea of playing, being a kid and playing in an orchestra and then playing Irish music on the weekends, you know, that casual folk sound, that casual experience that you got playing Irish traditional music in Chicago, what did you take from that? I mean, what was the learning experience that you got being a kid who got to play in that environment?
Well, that music has a purpose in our lives. That there's like a utilitarian quality to it. I mean, the tunes are for dancing, but also you're in a circle playing them, and someone plays a new tune that no one else has heard, and then by a couple times around, everyone is trying to learn it. And I to this day, that's the way I do music. That's the way I communicate with other musicians. And no matter how much of this music becomes a business for me or whatever, I try to stay in touch with that.
You've found ways to use your violin, and I mean, a lot of other instruments as well, but particularly the violin in a way that, you know, it goes beyond the traditional Scottish, English, you know, Irish folk music or beyond classical music. It really does delve into the world of indie rock. Was that sort of the plan for you? I mean, the idea of finding new ways to use your violin to try new types of music?
Yeah, I mean, that was a very brief period when I was playing that music. And then I was also going out to lounge acts when it was open and Empty Bottle and engaging with the local indie rock scene. And coming from where I was, the classical world, that was a pretty foreign world. It was not musicianship was not valued. it was all about, I just had a whole different set of values, but I got it. You know, I understood this, what you need to do is make a connection to people. You need to write a song that's different and that really engages people. And that became the ultimate challenge to me, is to write a good 3.5 minute song, you know, with lyrics that, you know, that make you think or engage you. So all the musicianship in the world can't make you connect to that person.
I'm fascinated by that move away from classical music. For people who play violin and other classical instruments, you know, that is a difficult transition, because a lot of bands aren't necessarily looking for violinists to be a part of it. You almost, in a weird way, have to become your own singer-songwriter, your own writer-musician to be able to do the things you want to do with that instrument.
Well, half the time you'll see I play it like a guitar, you know. Getting it away from your vocal cords helps when you're a singer-songwriter. So,
yeah, right.
And I also am into, at a certain point I just started saying, okay, the violin doesn't define me, even though I would practice 8 hours a day, and I got to a point where it did sort of define me. At some point I had to be like, well, I've got more to say than just, look how, what a great player I am. I really wanted to say more than that, and so at that point I started just using and abusing the instrument to do whatever I had to on stage, which I still do, and oftentimes making it not sound much like a violin.
Right. Let's talk about that Chicago scene that you came into, both with Squirrel Nut Zippers and Bowl of Fire. But talk about, you know, what was it like back in, I guess it would be the 90s, you know, 20 years ago, when you started to get into the scene with the Squirrel Nut Zippers, where you started to play different clubs and get out of that classical world?
Well, you know, it was an education. I had just come out of conservatory where, you know, that's the concert hall where, honestly, sometimes there's not a great relationship between the audience and the performers. Sometimes the performers are like, why don't they understand this music and appreciate it? Whereas the Squirrel Nut Zippers, actually, I got my education in rock and roll from the Squirrel Nut, from an old-timey swing band. They put on a great rock and roll show, like high energy, short, concise songs, catchy and clever. But what I really noticed was that live energy for the first time and putting on a great show. And I was like, I want to do this. You know, this feels right to me. And I also learned a lot about, you know, the record business and everything from them. I was 23 when I started playing with them. But then I started the Bowl of Fire and was playing around Chicago, and then got a conversion van and started going out of town for gigs and booking my own tours. And so it was a good 8 to 10 years of just playing tiny rock clubs around the country.
I read an article, I think it was in Pitchfork, and the header was something along the line, this was 2007. It was like, Andrew Bird may be a hidden treasure in Chicago, but he's about to break out. And it blew my mind because, you know, right now, thinking about it 10 years later, I mean, you've broken out. You're playing, you know, you're at Pritzker Pavilion. You're playing all over the place. You got your 13th album is out. But it was interesting in 2007 that the characterization was that you were a Chicago gem, but the country didn't know who you were. When did you realize that you were more than just a Chicago musician?
I don't know. I definitely got out of town pretty early on. Like I started touring mostly in the South in pretty early on, but I was still playing weekly gigs in Chicago. At a certain point, it becomes like, okay, you can't tap your own market too hard and play too often. And then that's when the thinking started to shift from, you know, how can I play music as many nights as possible? So, yeah, that happened early on. And I think you realize that you have to get, you know, be a national act. But then at a certain point, when I disbanded the Bowl of Fire and then I released a solo record, Weather Systems, that's when things started to, I noticed a shift to a more critical mass. Suddenly, there were lines outside the club, and I'd be coming from getting a coffee and see the line and be like, oh no, who's playing tonight? I'm like, oh crap, it's me.
Oh no, it's me.
So yeah, that was, at one point, my most ambitious goal was to play for 200 people anywhere in the world.
You check that one off as you're playing Pritzker Pavilion in Millennium Park this week. Great reviews. Everybody loves the new record, which came out earlier this year, Are You Serious? And one of the things I thought was interesting was even in the iTunes description for it, you talk about, you know, this is the first record since Marriage and Parenthood. And mm-hmm. It really tugs at the idea that perhaps your writing has changed or you've evolved because of those momentous occasions in your life. Is that true? I mean, do you feel that you're a different kind of songwriter or musician after the marriage and having kids?
Yeah, there's less time for navel gazing, and there's an urgency to tell for the first time instead of these sort of things. When you're younger, you know, you have more time to wallow in your own internal issues. Mm-hmm. But this was like more of a urgency to tell. And I think people think, oh, it's a cliche, the Andrew Bird grows up record or whatever. I'm 43. But that's when that can be the kiss of death sometimes. Mm-hmm. And no one thinks, oh, boy, I'm going to go buy that Andrew Bird Grows Up record. But what a lot of these songs are dealing with is just like, no, you think starting a family means you've settled down or are complacent. It's actually a whole new universe of heartbreak and drama that you can't even imagine before it.
As you've evolved and your music has evolved, as I mentioned at the top, 13th studio album, and we go back to the beginning of the different influences. I mean, you've been proficient in traditional folk music, bluegrass, you've done jazz, blues. You can taste it in all the music that you do. Is there a point musically where you think you want to go that you haven't evolved to or that you haven't tried a particular genre that interests Andrew Bird?
It's a trajectory away from these sort of genres into a sort of none of the above category, and it keeps going in that direction. Although sometimes I go back and play the old-timey jazz stuff because it's a blast to play. And now I think I've kind of earned the right to just play whatever I like. But I have a lot of side projects that make sure that I can use every part of my musicianship. So I've got the echolocations where I play site-specific outdoor performances that have where the sound bounces off the environment and I get like a sonic map of the environment.
Oh, that's great.
And I have the Gazella Guide shows I do every year in Chicago in the church, which is a similar idea. I kind of play to the room and use the reflections of the room to create an environment. And that seems to be a common thread. It's all about playing to the room and adapting to your environment. And that's what I find the most. That and writing a good pop song are the most challenging things to me.
You know, I'll go back to the first question to wrap it up here about mm-hmm. getting back on stage in Chicago at Pritzker Pavilion, Millennium Park, people coming out. You say you get amped up for it more than other shows on the tour. But is it because of all those memories, all those moments playing on those weekends, you know, playing Irish music, going to Lounge X, Empty Bottle, all those things that we've just talked about in this interview, are those the things that come rushing back that get you
it
antsy?
It is. In a way, like, I go back to being 19, 20 years old again and thinking that everyone cares like younger people do. And it's just, yeah, you have a sense of the whole city expecting something from you. And it's heavy. Whereas, you know, people maybe, I play Chicago less than a lot of other places these days, but you still assume that everyone's been there with you every step of the way.
Well, we have. Andrew Bird is going to be playing at the Pritzker Pavilion at Millennium Park on Wednesday. His latest album is called Are You Serious? Andrew Bird, thanks for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good talking to you.
What happened to Ham Jam tonight? Jason Hammel rocked. Do you want to get rocked? That's what I would say. 8 runs.
Yeah, he's had a bad... Well, he had, like, his last game he was okay, but then he had a couple of bad stretches where he... He had like 30 pitches and Joe Madden took him out. He got mad.
He's on my fantasy baseball team.
Oh, that's right.
He's currently in the playoffs and have been warned constantly that Jason Hammel will break down as the season gets longer.
Yeah.
And I was like, no way. This is a new year for Ham Jam.
Well, last year they said that he was hurt. Yeah. That's why he was terrible in the second half.
8 runs against the Brewers. I can't name 2 Brewers. Ryan Braun and... Come on!
I watched the whole game yesterday.
That's what I'm saying. They got the big big hitter from Houston that used to be Chris Carter. Doesn't he play first base?
Mm-hmm. Craig Counsell? Is he a player manager?
He's a player manager. Yeah, and then a bunch of like red beards. There's a lot of red beards on that team.
You have to when you play for Wisconsin team.
Oh, man, oh, man. All right, so coming up, 10 o'clock, the worst.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about the worst. This is where we complain about the ills of society for prizes. That's right. We've got a great, great giveaway tonight for your worsts. We're going to 1, 2, and 3. We're going to give away a pair of tickets to the sold-out Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival on Saturday, September 24th at the United Center.
Wow.
How about that, huh? That's amazing. A pair of tickets to the sold-out Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival just for complaining.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Best complaints win. 312-981-7200. Claire Zuehlke and Steve Delahoyd will be joining me coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour. We're going to talk about the worst. You know what's the worst? Parking at the Hollywood Bowl.
That's the place that you went on vacation where you can't get out. You have to wait for the people
in front
of you.
Parking is set up like a DMV line or where you go to get your emissions, and you line up the cars back to back to back to back to back, and then there's no early out. You just have to wait until everybody gets in their cars to then be able to get to move. So it's almost like a game of a strange, like one of those like puzzle games that you get at the brain store. That's what it was. And it was really frustrating. I ended up reversing and going out the way we came in because I realized that's what was happening. It reminded me of when all the traffic was trying to get off Manhattan, I Am Legend, with Will Smith.
I missed that one, but
zombie
I understand, yeah.
Like in World War Z, everybody's trying to get out of town. That's what it was like. And that's the problem all across L.A. in my mind. I love the town. I love it. I really do like L.A. Like, it's a great place. The weather's great.
Mm-hmm.
But everything was an hour.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look, you're like, it's 48 minutes that turns into 106 before you get. And I have a great story about Google Maps where we Google mapped it from Venice Beach to where we were staying, which was up in Laurel Canyon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a beautiful place. It's really great. It was haunted. There was a ghost. The Airbnb we stayed
at. Oh, you get a discount for that?
That we're trying. We're
there was a ghost that you saw?
I didn't see the ghost, but there's a lot of ghost-like things happening. And I'm like, okay. And the way I reasoned with the ghost was like, all right, listen, we're only here for 3 days. I know you don't want us here. That's fine. But we're just renting. We're not moving in. It'll be yours in 3 days.
Really?
I reasoned with the ghost.
Did somebody die in the house? Do we know?
I don't know. I haven't done any research on it.
It's not in the little description.
There was just like a lot of weird things that happened where, you know, light went out, the dryer went on automatically. The alarm, this was an amazing thing. The alarm started beeping like a battery was missing, you know? So we called the guy, you know, at the Airbnb guy, Jerry. Hello, Jerry. And Jerry's like, well, that's weird because I've had the house for 10 years and it's just a sham. It's not a real system. I've never paid for the system. That shouldn't be working at all.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I was like, well, the ghost is mad because the ghost was cool. And then I came in with all my Kanye West on the Bluetooth. And the ghost was mad at me. So that was happening. Anyway, I was able to Google map and be able to not take the freeways to get back to Laurel Canyon. And right at the end, the last move was up the mountain. And I get there and it's just like red. To go up the mountain is red, meaning it's traffic jam city on a Friday at 5.
Of course.
I mean, it's just traffic jam to go up a mountain. That's the worst kind of traffic jam. But then I said reroute, and I said for 6 minutes faster, go down this route, right? So I'm like, instead of Laurel Canyon Road or Cold Canyon, I went on Franklin Canyon, right? You start going, and it's like, oh, is this really the way? It starts getting thinner. Is this really the way?
Oh, no.
You start going up, and it's like essentially like a service road. And you are on like dirt, somewhat paved dirt road going up the spiral mountain with no guards in your rental car on your expired license.
That's frightening.
It was very frightening.
Did you back out of that, or did you?
No, I powered through. Oof. I was like, "Hey, I got her now." I was like, "You know, I've committed to this."
Did you get there 6 minutes early?
I did.
And oh, you saved
it
time.
It did save the time. I give Google Maps a ton of credit. There was a point, too, where I'm like, is this a hiking trail or a road? Like, I couldn't tell. Like, I was in that kind of Laurel Canyon. Like, when there's actually water in that canyon. When you go down to the bottom, there's, like, a flowing river. And you're like, where is this in L.A.? And there were so many things about that Google Map trip that I was like, I'm not supposed to be here. This is, like, Stranger Things. I'm in the wrong spot.
When we were in Michigan, there is near the dunes, it says, you know, take a lakefront scenic tour, you know, drive the scenic tour. And I was like, hell no. That's all. That means driving on small, like, you know, rails where it's like, no, I hate that. I get white knuckles just thinking about you driving through that with.
You wouldn't have liked it. It was.
And you got to be like, you know, like, oh, yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. It's just every 3 seconds you had to make like a hairpin kind of turn. That was very windy. There's nothing like that in Chicago. But you know what? At the end of the day, I got 6 minutes of my life back.
It's going down,
y'all. All right, it's time for the worst. It's Tuesday night, 10 o'clock. One of the greatest segments where we complain about the ills of society for prizes. And tonight, the prize is pretty awesome. Listen to this prize. Pair of tickets to the sold-out Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival on Saturday, September 24th. So you get to go hang out with hockey players, check out training camp, and do all that good stuff just for complaining about something that is in your day. Claire Zilke, Steve Delahoyd, our first... Hello. Married panel.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
I didn't fact check that. I think that's pretty.
Yeah, let's go with it.
Let's go with it.
What if every single couple had been married?
I know that. Until now? It absolutely could have happened. I just wasn't paying attention.
Everybody's offended.
Claire Zilke, Steve Delahoyd, they're the co-producers of Funny Haha, the best literary reading series in Chicago. It's going to be Friday night at the Hideout. What time does that start?
6:30. It goes till 8. It's got an end point, so don't worry about it. You can go out and get dinner afterwards. We're not going to keep you there all night.
the spiel. I love it. All right. Well, good. Thanks for being here, you guys. Appreciate
that.
312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can call in or you can text the worst. We start tonight like we start every night with Pete Zimmerman. Pete, you ready to rock?
I am.
All right. Let's kick us off.
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst,
what's
Pete?
The worst?
My dryer door. I have one of these stackable, you know, washer dryer things.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
It's terrible because you're done with your laundry, you take the wet stuff and put it in the dryer, you open the wet junk, open the dryer door, start tossing stuff in. You can't get it all in one, you know, you put your head down and then boom, here comes the dryer door closing on you. Boom. Every time. They have to figure out and maybe they have figured out, and I haven't purchased the thing where there's a stick where you can keep that door open.
I think I think at a different price point, the doors are a little nicer.
I bet if you go to Apt, they probably have that.
What about a padded hat of some kind that you put on?
That could work. That's what they give you when you get a washer and dryer of significant size. They give you a padded hat. Yeah, that is the worst. That is the worst. Okay, there you go. All right, Claire, why don't you start us off? What's the worst, Claire?
The worst is, you know how you use soap? What's the Chicago brand soap that comes in the teardrop-shaped containers?
And it comes
in the
Method?
Method soap.
Ooh, yeah.
And
that's
you're
Chicago-based?
Almost at the bottom. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
At least they have a factory here.
Hey, now I'm in.
And it's almost over. It's almost empty, and then it comes top-heavy, and you're trying to wash your hands, and then it tips over and falls into the sink. And you're like, why am I even washing my hands?
My son, he went to hit it and he broke the thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a $4 waste, because at that point now it's just oozing out soap.
Yeah. He's got to wash his hands until he's done.
It just turns
You're
going to
use
off
all of that.
On hand washing in general.
Yes, that's good. I think I have a confession to make where I was always specifically sent to the store to find that or to find a different brand that's like a Target brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't find it.
Yeah. Huh.
And then I kind of fibbed when I got back saying, they're out of it. You know, that's what you do. You go, they're out of it, mm-hmm. man. You know, I tried. And then yesterday I was back in there and I text my wife and I was like,
Where is that stuff at? You know, just sort of like playing dumb. She's like, over by the laundry detergent. I'm like, oh. So I walked over there, and there's a whole row of beautiful, like, Method and other brand. And I was like, wow, I had no idea.
You know, you could do an entire show, I guarantee you, on women about their men going to the store for them. Not
the worst.
You could easily fill 4 hours with
that.
No,
it's the worst, having to go to the store.
That's true. That's
in
true.
General. All right, Steve, what do you got?
You know what's the worst is when you rent a bouncy castle, bouncy house from a service in town, and then they call you back a couple days later and they try to upsell you on a bigger bouncy house, and they will also add in a couple of tables. But it implies that I know a lot about different sizes of bouncy houses. And that we need extra tables. And I just had it for a minute, the person inside of me said, like, yeah, we definitely need a bigger bouncy house, like the one we rented.
It's too small. There's way too many duct tape holes. That's my favorite thing about the bouncy house in Chicago.
Yeah.
Where they duct tape a hole shut to keep that thing going, right?
Yeah, and no. I said, nah, I think we're good with
I
our
think we're good.
20.
Well, it's insulting. Like, you don't have enough tables, but they think you're running some kind of, you know, program here.
What if you needed tables and you didn't think that this place would provide them?
That's true. Yeah, but everything worked out, but I was like, eh, come on. We're spending however much, $200 on an inflatable thing.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. You can text or you can call. You can call like Jasmine. Jasmine, what's the worst, Jasmine?
Riding home on the school bus in a day like today with no air conditioning.
No air conditioning? Oh.
Nope.
Oh, no.
You know, and opening the windows doesn't help. It just lets more heat in.
And how old are you? What grade are you in?
I'm a junior, and I'm just calling before I have to go to bed.
Oh, well, I bet not everyone in your class, too, like, is an all-star when it comes to deodorant, too. I'm sure you get a little bit of that coming your way, too. I feel your pain, for sure.
So, yeah, that happened today.
Well, Jasmine, thanks for the call. That's a good one. That's good. I hope they fix that. They should at least have AC, right?
Why
don't school buses have air conditioning on them?
Because they have that little tiny fan by the driver, and that's all they think that they need, remember?
Just to teach you to be tough. The world's going to be tough. It's going to, You just have to fight through.
That's a tough one. All right, thanks, Jasmine. Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Thanks. There you go. So, Jasmine, that is a good one, man. I forget about how hot that was. And then you have like that weird, not rubber, but not plastic kind of covering of those seats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you try to bite them off. Was that just me? That might have just me.
I think so.
It might have been. Yeah. All right. Let's go to Matt. Matt, what's the worst, Matt?
The worst is, by the way, welcome back.
Thank you, buddy.
Welcome. The worst is when you have a great, the worst, and then you realize you have to wait 2 weeks because Justin Coffin decides to take a vacation.
1 week. It was 1 week. It was one missed Tuesday.
Yeah, I know, but then I had to wait a week from the Tuesday that before.
Right.
Yeah, so it was 2 weeks. Anyway, you guys have a great night.
Oh, all right, thanks.
Thank you.
You should be more thoughtful before you plan your vacations.
Mm-hmm. When we went on vacation last time, Amy Guth sat in and she played the worst. She did the worst and had fun with it. So, I mean, when we have a substitute host, we give them carte blanche. They can do whatever they want. But as you can see, as Matt said,
people's worst are piling up.
They're piling up.
Yeah.
That should make for today a worst. Worst.
Best, well, worst.
Best worst. Best worst.
I have another one.
All right, go for it.
This is a marriage-related one. When you email your spouse and they don't get back to you, and they try and tell you that they were too busy to respond when you literally spent the entire day with them and you tracked their time. And
why are you tracking my time?
Well, you know, I just know. I know when you're busy. I mean, hypothetically, I'm not saying come on.
But what was the email? Was it read this awesome?
It
long
was
article?
Actually related to Funny Haha. It was get me this publicity information, and he didn't have time because he's busy, man.
He's got headspace. You never think of a headspace.
True. There was cigar smoking newspaper reading time that had to, you know. That
I get in trouble for that too. But a lot of times it's stuff that my wife's highly organized, so it'll be stuff for like 6 weeks from now. You know, this is what I'm thinking about for Christmas, and I'm like,
Are you mad at her because she's thinking so far ahead of time?
No, I'm not mad. I just go, that's something that I'm not going to think about right now.
That's not something I'm capable of. Yeah. Well, if I can throw, you ask about, you start making dinner plans at breakfast while we're eating breakfast. And I'm just incapable of thinking about two meals ahead of time.
But you have to get capable because someone has to go to the store and make a list.
I understand.
No, you have to get hungry. I also think two meals ahead anyway. Yeah.
Dirty laundry.
This is awesome. Yeah. Steve, are you hearing what Clara's saying?
I am. And I feel that you're hurting me.
Steve Delahoy, Claire Zolke in studio. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Stay with us. It's the worst here on the download. 312-981-7200. Claire Zolke, Steve Delahoy in studio. They're co-producers of Funny Haha, the best literary, I guess I would say the best.
Reading.
Do you say humor series?
Literary humor. It's not stand up and it's not improv, but it's funny. And, right. Often, even though I know that you take issue with this, Justin, sometimes people read stuff off that. Pieces of paper.
You know what's the worst?
This thing.
When readers get up there and they read off a page.
When people expect you to memorize things, you have time for that.
You're a performer. You're a writer and you're going to perform your stuff.
You're a
performer. Steve, that would be like if you do all the film stuff for Funny Haha. Mm-hmm. If you were like, okay, I'm just gonna tell you what it is. I didn't really do the work to it, and then you show clips, but you didn't really edit it together.
That's probably what I'm gonna do this week.
It's a great show. Check it out, Funny Haha, which is be Friday night 6:30 at the Hideout. All right, let's get back to the worst. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Gary. Gary, what's the worst, Gary?
I don't have air conditioning in my car, and it gets 100 degrees, and one of them pop-up thunderstorms come, and you got to roll the windows up.
Oh, worst.
Oh, and then you just kind of crack at a hair and get soaking wet just to get a breath of air before you pass out.
I have one worse than that. The first summer I lived in Chicago.
Thanks, Gary.
The first summer I lived in Chicago, I had a Kia Rio. And something in it broke, and you'd have to run the heater so the car wouldn't overheat. So during the summer, it would be miserable, and then 70s, you also had to blow the heater. Yeah. And that was misery.
I feel like every car that my parents had.
Yeah, had that.
Know, like the truck.
Yeah.
You had to hit the heat.
My dad had this really cool, he had a black Ford Mustang convertible, which was really cool, except when it was summer and the seats were so hot that you had to put towels on to sit on them, and the seatbelt buckles would burn you. And so it was not fun to sit. It was like this cool car that we all hated to sit in because
I've had problems with my car where battery problems. So I'm very gun shy to turn the car on with the AC and not have it running. If that makes sense, because I'd done that once or twice and the battery died, and I was just anyway. Point being that, so I'm always in today I had to wait for 5 minutes in the car, and so it's the worst that you got to turn it on and just watch the gas kind of go, you're eating the gas to just be normal temperature.
Yeah.
Because you can't shut it off because it's
stationary.
So hot. All right, let's keep going. Kathy, what's the worst, Kathy?
The worst was last week when I traded vehicles, my Chrysler 300.
You got a Chrysler 300?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, that's what I rented. Beautiful. That's what I rented when I went to L.A. That was a beautiful car.
I like those.
Oh, I loved it.
You got rid of it?
I did, because there was three more in my neighborhood that looked exactly like it. And I'm no, I'm done. So,
wow.
But the worst was trading it. They got my car with a full tank of gas, and when I drove off in the brand new Jeep, it had less than a quarter of a tank of gas. And so when I thought, oh, hell no. So when I went back the next morning to sign a couple papers, I told them, look, you got my car and a full tank of gas. Give me some gas. And they did.
Oh, good.
They did?
Good.
Wow.
Good for you.
Yeah, they went
This is the worst with a happy ending.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, but I thought, I just filled up my car, the day before, and it had a full tank of gas. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
So that was my worst.
Well, what are you going to do when all the people who have the Chrysler 300s right now trade their cars in, though? And then
get
the same car as the new one. You're going to have to go back.
They won't get it this Jeep because this Jeep was special ordered. Oh. It's black, head to toe, inside and out, front and back.
Wow.
Baller.
Yeah. So anyway.
Good for you, though. Good for you for getting that gas.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. That was good. That was good. Thank you. That's not a bad one.
All right. The Chrysler 300 I did like, man. I was balling.
I think when Chrysler bought Bentley, they stole Bentley now. I don't remember, but it looks like a fancier car.
Steve has a couple of like unsung skills. One is always identifying celebrity voiceovers and commercials, and he I think he's correct, but I don't know, but he always says which companies own which other companies. And he might be making it all up, but he'll just like he did right there.
Let's go. Let's go to Joe. Joe, what do you got, Joe? What's the worst?
So, you know when you go to the movies, there's, like, a guy that sits next to you, and he, like, already saw it 5 times, and he's telling his friend how it ends. He just spoils the whole thing for you.
That like really stinks. Happened? That happened to you?
Yeah.
What movie?
I think it was a Suicide Squad.
Oh.
Is it the same guy every time?
Not really.
Okay, is he related good. To you?
I can't believe someone saw Suicide Squad 5 times and that that does stink. And especially, it's not cheap to see a movie anymore. So.
How do they do it, Jill? Did they say, here it comes? Like, what do they do?
He was like, oh, this is the part when, like, this guy dies or something.
Oh, that's terrible, yeah.
Oh, spoiler alert, speaking of which.
Well, there are a lot of death in Suicide Squad, so.
All right, Joe, you wouldn't think that.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it.
With that name.
With name, right. Yeah. Joe, thanks. That's a great one. I like Joe. That's an early favorite for me.
Yeah,
the
I
guy
like that too.
Who talks.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can just imagine that guy, that Suicide Squad.
312-981-7200. Let's go to the text. Let me read these. I haven't pre. All right, let's see. The worst, when you wake up late for work, shower, shave, get dressed, get to work and realize you've gone all the way to work without shoes.
No, I don't believe that one is real.
Yeah, right? How would you
do that? Yeah.
Were you wearing different shoes? Maybe it was like, oh, I wore the different shoes. Yeah, you're right. I feel like you would know right away when you leave your apartment or house that you are shoeless.
Yeah.
What about if you have something like your extremities are numb or something like that?
I want that person to follow up and explain themselves.
This is a different segment. That's the worst follow-up just tomorrow. All right. 815 says, the worst, going into work at the pharmacy on the day after a holiday and someone who works for the post office and all the holidays they get complain to us about being closed on Labor Day. Grr.
Mm.
Yeah.
So they're mad at the post office guy.
Yeah.
That is the worst. People complaining about stuff when they have the same. They were off too.
The post office gets a little bit more sympathy for me now with the Amazon weekend deliveries. I get I've given them a modicum more of.
Do they work on the weekends because of that?
Yeah. How they do Sundays.
That's a post office thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh. 630 says the worst are drunk people.
Yeah.
I was at a Metallica concert and felt some spray on the back of my leg. When I turned around, you can guess what the guy was doing.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
That is a bad
thing. I cleaned it up, too.
Mm. Do you remember we went to that Wilco concert, and we sat the entire time? It was Wilco and Andrew Bird, and I was 9 months pregnant, and we sat the entire time in the stands, and there was a drunk guy who kept trying to, like, be the hype man for Wilco. Like, he kept standing up and trying to get people to dance. Like, come on, man! And, he was mad at everyone for not raging
more. That's
the
worst. Yeah. The unofficial hype man at a concert is the worst.
Yep.
You're not doing it right. You're not watching cool enough. 773 says, the worst is one of your preschool students crawls into your lap to whisper in your ear, and then they wet their
pants. Oh, yeah.
That's the worst.
That is the worst.
Today that happened. Oh, no.
That's a good one.
That is a good one. Yeah. I feel so bad.
That teacher deserves to meet Blackhawk.
Until that happens with the Blackhawk.
Yeah, then it could be.
It's awkward.
630 says the Chicago Bears' common sense by letting Robbie Gould go. That's the worst.
Yeah. I actually had no idea that happened. That makes me sad.
Yeah.
What are they going to say now? What's the new guy? And what are they going
to
say?
His new name, that's good. We need to come up with a nickname for him because it was Good as Gold.
Good as Gold, yeah.
Now it's Connor Barth. Barth.
Maybe he should change his name to... Field goal.
Best like, best in Barth.
Barth Vader.
Barth Vader. Hey, yeah, there it is.
You've done it.
Okay.
All right. The worst is when you have a whole cart of groceries and you unload the last one on a checkout counter and the cashier tells you she's closed.
Yeah, that stinks.
That's awful.
A dumb one.
That's like that's just mean. At that's the Target mean. I go to, the self-checkout breaks on the first item, and there's never anyone there. And then I'm mad at myself because I'm like, what kind of system did I think I was beating by doing self-checkout? Like, I know it's always going to go awry, but you still think, like, I'm going to get out of here so fast. I'm not going to have to talk to anyone. Right. No.
I'm not a fan of I wouldn't say it's the worst just yet. But, like, I think of the way that Target does their double grocery store shopping, like, what do you call it? Like, checkout lanes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the one behind it and there's one in front of it. And they're always like, those are really hard to get to because you're maneuvering around the ones that are in front. Like, that whole system needs to change.
I agree.
You know, and I just feel like someone came up with, someone in an office somewhere was like, well, what if we double the, that's double the efficiency. And there's just something about the whole experience that you're just confused.
That's like Trader Joe's. Yeah. Sort of. You're like, what side am I going on? What is
only
this?
Eight of like 40 of them are active. Yeah, right. So why did you could have used that space for more retail.
You could have done eight across. Yeah. Mm-hmm. More batteries. More DVDs.
Just sell more Suicide Squad DVDs.
More Suicide Squad. 773 says, follow up, I had socks on.
Oh, okay.
Was a tad hungover.
All right.
Maybe a little drunk still, and I honestly just forgot.
Okay.
It was a marketing job, and then when I went to meet with clients for the rest of the day, I just told them that I stepped in dog doo. There you go.
All right.
Claire's still out to lunch on that. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll do another round of worse, and we'll get the people in. They're still open for these Blackhawks tickets. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's the worst here on the download. Stay with us.
It's going
It's the worst here on the download. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Claire Zolke, Steve Delahoyd in studio with me. They're the co-producers of Funny Haha, the best literary humor reading series in Chicago. Friday night, 6:30 at the Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia, right by the garbage dump.
Yeah, everybody knows exactly where that is.
Between the garbage trucks and the Home Depot.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know where they go to gas up the trucks?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe do a little clean.
Yeah.
Like wash a garbage truck?
It's right there.
It's right there.
It's like a episode. There's like a fancy grocery store there now in that block.
What?
Yeah, right. The other side of the Hideout. Like that area is gentrified now on the way.
Ugh, it's the worst.
Yeah.
You know, what's the...
Yeah.
When their bar that you...
Yeah, the
been going
hipster
to
bar that you've been going
and
to.
And going on the radio and promoting it, and then all of a sudden people start going
start
to
liking
it.
Ugh. Well, I can't wait. I've just had a thought in my head that there'll be a Potbelly's next to Hideout, and then on the other side there'll be a Chipotle, and then there'll be like a Banana Republic right there. And
probably.
And then someone will walk in 20 years and go, this is so weird. This paint is blue. Like, it almost feels like garbage trucks used to be here. You're like, yep, this was. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's get to the phones. Noelle, what's the worst, Noelle?
Hey, Justin, I'm in the middle of it right now. I left Albany, New York at 9:30 this morning trying to get home.
Okay.
I have to be at work at 5 a.m. I was about 200 miles into my trip in upstate New York, and I got a souvenir from the New York State Police.
Oh,
no. What were you doing? What'd they clock you at?
They clocked me at 83, but ticketed me at 75.
That's bogus. I mean, right. I don't think you ticket after under 85. Like after 85, you ticket on a toll road. Go ahead.
You know, and the problem is you can't plead not guilty because what am I going to do? Go to court?
Right.
Mm. You know, so I've had to set my cruise control at the speed limit the whole trip home. I'm still 150 miles away from Joliet, which is where I live.
Oh man.
And I am done.
Yeah,
I bet.
You know what you need to do? Here's what you do. Every 5 or 10 miles, add one or two speed. What do you call it? Miles, I guess.
Miles per hour.
Miles per hour
to the speed units
to the cruise control. Before you know it, you're back up to 75. You're not paying attention. You're in. Once you get to Illinois, they're cool.
Yeah, it's all lawless here.
If only it was that simple. I got a warning on the way out from Indiana, so I don't want to chance it either.
So you got a warning on the way out and then a ticket on the way in?
You deserve like a good coffee station, you know, gas station coffee with like 8 sugars.
It's terrible. I'm on my third 5-hour energy and I just had a quad Starbucks.
I am so tired. I can't even tell you.
All right. Well,
I just want to go see the Blackhawks and get home.
All right, Noel. All right. We'll see. We'll see if you pass muster. Pay attention. We should wrap up before you get home. All right, Noel. Thank you.
Drive safe.
I just picked you guys up. So.
All right. Good.
Drive safe. Right. Get home.
Thanks.
Bye.
There you go. Wow.
That's a long trip.
That is a long trip, and she says she has to be back at work at 5 tomorrow.
I know. That stinks.
It's late, 10:37.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is she's like a truck driver, probably. She's going to get back on the road.
Yeah,
at 5.
Right. Yeah. Not. Didn't even think about that, what she does. Yeah. She's going to depot and then be back out on the road.
Yeah. I hope she's not a surgeon
Three five-hour energies.
That's 15 hours.
Yeah.
15 hours plus a quad Starbucks, whatever that means, but it just sounds very fancy.
Just hold on.
I remember in college,
you
would drink that much caffeine and then you'd fall asleep and then you're like, well, this is out of my hands now.
Yeah,
like
I tried.
I did my best.
All right, let's go around the horn one more time. Pete, you got any more? You want to try another the worst? We just check in with Pete.
Sure.
What do you got?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
The worst.
Drawstrings.
Yeah.
They're useless things. Most people, if they're on your pants, you're not using them.
Oh, it's the worst.
You're not on your. They put them on a sweatshirt, a hooded sweatshirt
gone
for some
after
reason.
The second wash,
they fray, or they're gone, and you're trying to get a needle into pulling them back around.
Yeah.
Get rid of them.
On the kid's clothes, the kid doesn't know how to tie them, so I am totally on board with this.
Nice move. Drawstrings.
Yeah.
The worst.
Solid.
Did you think of that on the way up in Michigan? You're doing the tour around the dunes.
I was doing laundry. This is a very laundry themed, and I like my running shorts are all frayed.
Yeah, free yourself.
Yeah. Steve Delahoy, what do you got for the worst?
The worst is when your 4-year-old son, his best friend, has the same name as you. So my son's best friend's name is Steve, and my name is Steve, and it's very confusing. And if their parents are over a lot all the time, and the mom will say, like, Steve, you want some carrots? And I was like, I do want some carrots.
I love some carrots.
And it's not for me. And I can't. Those aren't my carrots to have. So that's a good one. That's the worst.
All right, Claire.
This one's not as poignant, but it's for fall. It's autumn. You know when you're eating an apple? And everyone has a standard method of eating an apple, I presume. You go once around the hemisphere, and then you do the top and the bottom. And you're about to finish it the way you should, but then it just all crumbles.
And you just take
a big bite of stem.
Big bite of stem. Huh.
That's pretty great. I've never thought about the way I eat an apple. I think you and I eat apples differently. I think I work on side and then complete the entire up and down. Wow. I'll have to watch next time you eat an apple.
I feel like there's a segment.
No, you go around the equator and then the top and the bottom.
Huh. Maybe I do. I just never thought.
All right. We'll save this for next time.
If you want to give us our own show, we can just keep talking about this.
All right. Let's keep going here. Let's see what I got here. I got a lot of people that have texted in. So why don't we get at that? When the worst, 708 says, the worst is when you're talking to someone who has to continually get closer to you or touch you. That's very specific.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The worst is when you're caring for an elderly uncle. Okay, we're going to skip that one. It's like, you know, you get these come in so fast and as they get further along. Usually you can tell from me that I will skip ones that are bathroom humor. Not even humor, but, you know, right when you get to the point where you read Hershey's and you're like, I'm done. That's a good one, though. 773's got a good one. The worst is when the deli worker doesn't peel the package down far enough before slicing, and you have to pull the little shards of plastic off every slice of cheese.
Oh, yeah. No way.
Yeah.
Oh. That's like when you get the sausage, and you can't tell if you're supposed to eat that outside part or not.
Yeah, right.
And then you work on it for a long time, and they have to secretly pull it out of your mouth and put it on the plate.
Ah, that's awesome. All right. That's good. That's just a bad deli worker.
Yeah.
This is someone who just does not care. 847, the worst is a buy one, get one free item at the grocery store, but there's only one of the items left on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
That's
terrible.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
I feel like I've had
great
that
worst.
Open at that's like Home a Depot cone. Or something recently. Yeah. Ouch.
630 says, get up at 5:30 for work, exercise, shower, dress, breakfast, turn on Cochrane, and wonder why Manfredini's on. Uh-oh, it's Saturday. I read that in such a like a announcer way.
I thought it was going to be another lost shoes thing.
Yeah.
I was waiting for that.
The The worst is when your blood type, this is 219. Worst is when your blood type is O and your ex tells your daughter she is O, but the daughter is A. What? What is the scam?
No, and how do you yeah. suddenly need that information?
And also, like, what's wow. the scam? Like, I don't know. It's like, I don't
understand. That's dangerous, too.
Yeah. Why? But what's, I mean, what is, 219, explain that to me. Why is that a, yeah. Like, what is the ex trying to do to you to, like, change the, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Am I missing something? Am I getting the letters wrong? When your blood type is O, your ex tells your daughter she is O, and the daughter is A.
So is there like a paternity thing happening?
Yeah, that's
here?
What I'm trying to figure out. Like, it's like a geometry, but that doesn't, like a math.
But
thing.
I don't think blood tests.
You know what?
Blood
school just
like
started.
Yeah,
there's no way we're gonna get at this.
You just got back from vacation.
I just got back. There's no way. The 630 says the best was free Oreo fraps at DQ until 5 today.
Whoa.
That's that's from a different segment.
Oh.
All right, this is good.
Now we found out about it, that we could have been having these things.
That
and
is
we
the
didn't
worst.
Get it.
I know,
the thanks
worst.
A lot for telling us now.
Maybe that's what they were going for.
Yeah.
214 says the worst is when you have stapler's remorse and no staple remover. So you try to take the staple out with your fingers, but you have no nails because you bite them and you can't get your fat fingers under the staple, front or back. By the time you get it off, you've ruined the papers. And I don't want Claire doubting me. This really happened.
I believe it. I know. It's so wasteful. Or then you're doing a presentation, and then your paperwork looks shoddy. I get it. I'm there.
See, you got it. Yeah, there you go. Okay, the worst is when your infant daughter projectile vomits into the vent of your brand new car.
You know what? I actually threw up into the vent of a car one time.
Did you?
I did. And
no, it was the speaker well on the side of the
car.
Oh,
that was the worst. I had some sort of flu, and I threw up all the way home from Christmas in Buffalo Grove. And Steve, one of the worst things is that Steve thought I was drunk. So he was
not super
sympathetic. And then he accidentally threw away the coat that I had thrown up on, and it was my favorite coat. So that was – anyway.
You thought you were doing a good deed.
He did.
Well, I cleaned up the car the next day.
Yeah.
It was in a bag.
Anyway, I've been there, and I can attest that throwing up into any sort of vent or speaker in
the car.
No,
you can't get rid of that.
It's not a good move.
It's done.
Yeah.
319, the worst, those leg calf muscle cramps that wake you up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
270, the worst, when you drop a huge bottle of lotion then accidentally step on it when you're leaning over to pick it up, causing all the lotion to squirt out all over the floor.
And then you have to figure out if you're going to use it. You have to get all your friends to come in and moisturize.
Everyone moisturize your arms. Roll around.
Guys, it's happened again.
847, the worst is when you're 50 and someone comments on how much your daughter looks like you. But your daughter's actually your 47-year-old sister.
That's pretty good.
312 says the worst is when you eat an apple and then you have no garbage can near you, so you try to eat the core without anyone seeing you. That's the worst.
Why?
I will litter an apple core. I'm not. I don't feel bad about that because that's part of the earth. Like, it's going back ashes to ashes.
All right, we got some good stuff.
Eat the core.
All right. 312-981-7200. Stay on the line. Heidi, others, keep texting in. We will pick the top three winners coming up here in the last segment of The Worst. Stay with us. It's going down. Come the worst, my people come It's a download. That means it's the worst. Steve Delahoyd, Claire Zolke in studio. They're the co-producers of Funny Ha Ha. The best literary humor series going in Chicago. It's at the Hideout this Friday night at 6:30. Who's on the show this week?
Oh, we've got some great people. A lot of people who are new to the show. J.W. Bacillo.
He does the Green Mill.
The beat poetry. Yeah.
Original poetry.
Lily B., who is an amazing storyteller. We're going to have Abraham Levitan come and do some, I think, some improv operetta.
The listeners here know Abraham. He does Nerds on Tour once a month here with us.
Yeah, he's
great. Talks
he's
about
amazing.
Music industry. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. And Steve Delahoyd is going to do some film.
What are you going to show? You're going to show Possum in the House?
I might. Claire wants me to show some old election things I made like before I lived in Chicago. And then I might do a little thing about our son who's got some made up phrases that have become kind of part
That's
of
like
our
an inside joke.
Language. Yeah. Great. I'm going to try to spin it into something. I've got 3 days.
Should be
to
reading
do
your
it.
Emails, man. You're already 3 days.
No,
back.
That's true. Well, that's why. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Heidi. Heidi, what's the worst, Heidi?
Hello.
Hi. What's the worst?
Hi. You know what's the worst? When your sweet elderly next door neighbor gives you a bag of clothes, and in it are a bunch of her old negligees.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you wash it or do you just throw it out?
Is it nice? Nice stuff?
They were negligees. Oh. They went straight to Goodwill.
Well, good for her.
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah. She asked me if I tried this stuff on and how I liked it.
Ooh.
I think she's getting fresh.
Yeah. There's something more there.
There were a bunch of old lady sweaters, but the negligees and the bras kind
of
creep.
You know what? Some people have a really hard time like letting go of lingerie. I know. I mean, I get it. And, but yeah, I would not give my neighbor my old undies to wear, no matter how nice it is.
I love that you gave it to Goodwill, too. Like now they're going to put it up
now
in the
someone
window.
Else is going to.
Bras.
What
underwear.
If she walks by? Wait a minute, that's mine. Your neighbor says
than me.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Heidi. That's a good one.
Thank you.
All right.
Heidi sounds like a really nice neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah. 563 says the worst is you go into a grocery store or department store that has 20 or 30 lines in it and there's only two or three open and people backed up waiting to check out. Yeah, that's like societal. That is the ultimate and the worst in the sense that that is all about Mr. Dominic trying to save money.
And it's like the kind of thing where if you're in line and somebody tries to move through the line to get through, you're like, what? You can't go to the back of the store to get around our line. But then if you're the person trying to cut through the line, you're like, what? You can't move for me? It's just like a societal breakdown.
I also think there's a societal breakdown in the self-checkouts where you'll see this where a line will form in the center of maybe a quad, like four of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that's the line you have to go stand in, and it goes far back into the aisle. So you're like, I'm not even sure. And then people aren't sure where they're supposed to be to what line. I think that's a breakdown. The stores you cannot survive in this society at a grocery store level by just being like, go figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you have it's to too, have rules.
It's too free.
Yeah, it's too free, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous. No, that's like saying...
I agree.
Yeah, this is a mini checkout. It means anything you'd like it to mean. Right? You have to say 10 items or less.
Yeah.
Like, you can't say anything. You know, like, it just doesn't work. Anyway, 773 says, Justin, the worst is to find out that the mayor announced your office is for sale. The garage trucks by the hideout are up for sale.
Oh. Are they really?
I didn't know that.
That makes sense. I mean, that real estate's got to be worth.
Yeah, they said they're moving the office to Inglewood.
Oh.
Ooh. Okay.
Wow.
815. When eating an apple and you find half a worm in it.
That's
like. And you have to eat it.
I love it. It's like half a worm. You already ate the other half, man. That's what it is.
Just take it to the hole.
And there's no trash can.
Oh no.
you gotta eat the rest of the worm.
630 says the worst is trying to fall asleep listening to this segment and cracking up at some of the stuff people say. Oh. And have to get up at 5:39 to drive to Indianapolis. That's very specific.
That is.
Like, that's when you're at the point where you are falling asleep and you're like, I've already set the alarm, so I'm going to get very specific.
I have that. I can't set it to like a 5:30. It's got to be like 5:32 or something.
This is like one of Steve's things. This is how Steve thinks that he has obsessive compulsive disorder, is because he sets his alarm at a weird time.
Mm-hmm. Or it's Steve gaming in the system.
Yeah.
He is 1-2 minutes back from his.
But sometimes I'll do it in reverse too. I'll do like a 5:27 or something.
Yeah, then you're losing.
No, I know.
But I even it out. I always wake up exactly. I make up the time. So if he's waking up at 5:24, I'm waking up at 5:20 just to set things straight.
Yeah.
Oh, this might be a winner. Like, this is just, all right, you ready for this one? 815. The worst, you're a pastor officiating a funeral for a person you didn't know and find out after the service that you've mispronounced the person's name through the whole time.
Wow.
That's bad.
That's the worst. Great. I've been at those. And that's from the pastor's point of view.
Yeah.
That's true. They don't like it either.
Yeah. Wow. Well, why would they like it? What kind of
Steve DeLahoyd? Right? If you did
it's fine. It's fine.
You'd be fine. You'd be okay.
Well, you'd be dead, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We all love Steffi DeLahoyd.
I like that.
That's the worst.
I find that reassuring.
Rating.
For some reason, it's my voice. Whenever I've answered the phone when I worked in offices and stuff, I would always say, I'd say, hey, this is Steve. And they'd say, hey, Dave. And I'd never correct them. And there's people that I knew for years.
But if you've collected a friends and family,
yeah.
to honor. And the person of power and stature is up there. We've come here today for Kalair.
Yeah. I'd be mad. I would be mad. Like,
that's not her name.
Well, how complicated is their name? Like, is
I don't know.
Is it?
No, but I would be mad as the pastor. But, like, someone didn't correct me. Like,
I've been to a couple of those where I'm like, oh, man, this is embarrassing.
Yeah. Okay, I promise that at your guys' funerals, when I'm there, because I'm going to outlive you all, if they mispronounce your names, I'll make sure correct that they it. Do
Thank
it right.
Thank you. Go up there and,
We're going to have a joint funeral, I'm assuming. That's the implication.
Yeah.
Okay.
630.
You and I.
We've got to share costs.
Sure. Here. Times are tough.
630, here's the worst going to work. Here's the worst. Going to work for years and find out they've closed overnight.
Ooh, yeah.
708, the worst is only when is not only when the store is really busy and only three check stands are open and the customers complain to the service desk, do you have more cashiers? Yep, I have more right behind this door and watching you in line, Carol.
No.
So that's Carol being the customer service person who's mad at the customers. I love it. This job is awesome. You get every angle. You get the pastor who's mad. I would think that you'd be the person in the funeral to be mad
Have
at
you
the
had
pastor.
Bob Mariano on your show?
We did. Yes, we did.
He's a great guy. I gave him a story. Yeah. I gave him a store idea, which he obviously rejected, but he acted like it was a good idea, and I appreciated that.
I walked into the Mariano's on Halsted Street not too long ago, and I saw Bob Mariano. Like in there, like collecting carts. I think it's like he does it for 5 minutes. So
he doesn't. He pops around to all the stores and checks them out.
He's retiring. That's
but here's I said that you should. They should label the aisles where the person there is under 21, so that if you're buying a bunch of you don't have to.
That's a brilliant idea. Worst.
Thank you.
All right. Let me see what I got. One more here. The worst is when a store clerk asks you if you're pregnant and you're so dumbfounded that the word yes comes out of your mouth even though you're not.
Oh. Yeah. Make her throw you a shower, then. It's the next logical step.
Would you like to throw me a shower? I would love to. Yay. All right. 312-981-7200. Thank you so much for playing, everybody. We're giving away a pair of tickets to the sold-out Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival on Saturday, September 24th, inside the United Center. The outdoor free festival starts at 8 a.m. The doors are open at 9 a.m. The first 10,000 fans to enter receive a Brent Seabrook bobblehead. We've got three pairs to give away. They usually give each show three for the month. I'm going to give them all away tonight. How about that? That's how we're going to do things. Let's start with 312. So third place, 312 says, the worst is when one of your preschool students crawls into your lap to whisper in your ear and they wet their pants. Today, that happened.
Yeah.
We're going for that sympathy right now. The empathy right now.
We have a preschooler.
I'd like to know what the whisper was.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It was a malicious act.
All right, second place is going to go to Joe. Joe who called in. Joe called in because Joe was sick of the person that talks throughout Suicide Squad giving away plot points because they've seen it already five times.
Yeah. And
that's crazy. I feel bad for Joe.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the, like, at what point
and I'm mad
do you think
at,
it's okay?
And I'm mad at that person for,
seeing that movie.
Just objectively, not even on Joe's behalf. I'm just mad that they exist, so.
And can I throw a, I would love to do one more if that's okay, Pete. I know we only have three tickets to give away, so I'm going to give this as an honorable mention and give away the Lou Malnati's gift. Is that okay? Yep. We'll give away a Lou Malnati's gift certificate to the pastor. 815, you're a pastor officiating a funeral for a person you didn't know, and you find out after the service that you mispronounced the person's name throughout the whole time. Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, so first place tonight is going to get to Noel. We knew you needed it because you've already done 3 5-hour energies and a quad Starbucks, and you have to go the speed limit because you got a ticket in New York. Noel, you're going to get tickets to the sold-out Blackhawks Training Camp Festival on Saturday, September 24th. That's worth it, right? It's worth all of it.
Oh, it's worth every minute of it. And, you know, I'm driving in my car with my dog, and her name is Zoe.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
That's her name.
Oh.
Yep. I just realized. I'm like, oh, wait, I got Zoe with me.
Oh.
There you go. That's crazy.
A good dog.
That is crazy, and that is how the world works. Noelle, thanks for playing, and I hope you get
home
safe.
Yeah.
All right.
I hope so, too. I'm 90 miles away.
All right.
How many five-hour energies more have you had?
No, I'm good. I got to work in the morning.
All right, good.
Get some rest. Take care.
Bye. All right, thanks, Noelle, and thanks to everyone who called in, and thanks to Claire Zolke and Steve Delahoyd, both co-producers at Funny Haha, this Friday night at 6:30 at the Hideout. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Thank Justin.
That's going to do it. Patty Vasquez up next. This is Chicago's very own 720 WTN Chicago.